You are tuned to Free Radio, though, in case you just tuned in and didn't know, 101.3 FM. And we are also streaming at a site in the TuneIn area. You can go to the TuneIn browser area. Actually, the best way to find the stream of Free Radio is to go to HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, HUFSantaCruz.org, and then click on the name of my show, which is, you're about to hear, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. And that's the name of the show you're going to be listening to for the next 3 hours. In the studio with me, I have two guests, Red and the notorious and sometimes violent Crow. Crow.
Hello.
Let's see now.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see now. We got which?
Hello?
I think you're both working.
Hello.
Yeah, the mic is working.
You're working on it.
And I want to apologize to listeners for being 25 minutes late starting the show. It was a combination of, we've had break-ins recently in the studio. We've lost some money. We've had to change our combination, and I had to resecure what the combination was in my dotage, and I found it, and I got into the studio. So I'm all as well. So that's the reason I'm late, although it sounds like the show preceding mine, which is, again, it's called Unsupported World, if you want to go online and look for it, Unsupported World. And it was, of course, about homelessness. And I don't know whether that particular show, which I don't know if you two were listening to it. Red, Crow, you listening?
No.
You weren't.
We got bad reception.
It's it was really interesting. And I'm trying to see if I've got more information on this show. I don't. It talked about gave a really grim picture of homelessness in the U.S. A huge number of house foreclosures. Over a million in the current year is what's predicted. But again, I don't know the time frame that was being mentioned in this unreported, it's not unsupported world, it's unreported world. Sorry if I misspoke myself. So if you want to check it out, I'm going to try to examine that program a little more closely later. But it really interesting stuff. And again, I'm not sure if it's a much older show. I think it's probably about last year and this year. So it's interesting. Isaac Collins, also known as the Lyrical Eye, a poet, a man with Occupy Santa Cruz, who kind of staffed the information table there for weeks at a time in rain and sun and so forth, slept under the table and provided a lot of information to the community for just those kind of people. People losing their homes, people who have already lost their homes and are trying to save their vehicles or that are now currently their homes. He's going to trial for possession of marijuana with intent to sell. That's coming up on in early December and Friday, I believe. I'm not sure what the date is, but it's this Friday. So today's the 25th, so it'll be the 26th, 27th, 28th, 29th. Wow, that isn't even December. That's still November. Maybe he means next month. I'll be reporting on that on Thursday night when I do another show announcing his court date, and he's looking for folks to come and be supportive. It's just going to be an arraignment. But this is one of those strange arraignments that happens many, many months later, similar to my arraignment as a member of the Santa Cruz 11, which is, it was a real strange slap in the chops. Usually you get arrested for something, and then you get arraigned for it, and then they either drop the charges or they take them to trial, and you're found guilty or not guilty or whatever. In this case, and in Collins' case, they're delayed a lot. And I don't know what the reason is. It could be they have a big backlog. It could be they're making political decisions. It could be any number of things. But Isaac Collins was arrested on 420, that's April 20th, up at the Great Meadow of the UCSC, where there were literally hundreds, if not thousands, of people smoking marijuana, which has just been decriminalized in Colorado and Washington for all purposes, not just for medical purposes, as it has in 17 states. And he is facing felony charges for being of course, he is a black man, so he probably deserves them. We know black people deserve to be treated a lot more roughly than white people because they're tough. They can take it. They got rhythm, and big cocks, right? That's the story. So, and of course, if you believe me, I've got some more shit I can sell you if you want to come with your money to the studio. In any case, that's a really an example of the bogus liberal veneer being stripped aside, and you see the iron fist underneath the, the soft, puffy, fluffy glove.
That would be my hand.
Yeah, it's all our hands, actually. Well, it's actually the hand of injustice that we're going to have to be fighting, and Isaac is fighting, and that the Santa Cruz 11 will continue to fight in January when we go back to court. And we have a couple here that's also been fighting these issues and appeared at the studio. with their home right around the corner. Don't ticket them, please. Red and Crow. Hey, Red and Crow. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. Hello.
Hey, you guys.
I'm just checking out all your nice, violent pictures. You got Indians standing there with guns, place on fire. And it's what Asian woman pointing a gun. I like that.
No, that's not violent. That's self-defense. So.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I don't know. I didn't put those pictures up there.
I didn't do it.
I didn't do it, Your Honor.
Lady holding the gun pointing at you. We will defend our ability to choose.
That would be my cousin.
Keep your laws off my body.
Well,
that's
see,
a nice picture.
Well, I think the point is that people do have a right to self-defense, and if you examine the civil rights movement of the 50s and 60s, you'll find that there was a parallel movement of self-defense from African-American soldiers who came back from World War I and World War II, and who saw lynchings going on in their town or faced discrimination, brutality, beatings from the Klan on the White Citizens Council, things of that sort. And, of course, similar groups in the North. And they took up arms in the sense that they had arms in their house.
Yeah.
Americans have a right
that.
To bear arms. Yeah. And even though the NRA didn't do too well in the last election, I think all their candidates went down. And I'm not really a major fan of the NRA. I am a supporter of the right to bear arms.
Yeah.
But the arms I bear are my little ancient tape recorder that I carry around.
That's great and everything.
That's my arms.
I was a peacenick for a long time.
I have swords.
Going around with the Grateful Dead, and I was totally against guns and weapons and blah, blah, blah. But once I had children, it dawned on me and occurred to me that if anybody hurt my children, I would kill them. And that's when I realized that, self-defense and protect the children. And, there would come a point. Like, if the worst scenario came down, I would have to do a crime that I would never, ever think of doing, which is kill another human being, But I realized, because the world's so fucked up, that it could happen at any given point in time. And, I had to come to the conclusion that, sometimes, to protect people that you love, violence can happen.
One big earthquake, you're all going to be in our position, too.
But anyway, I'm here to talk about what happened to me this morning.
And this is when you shut down four Parks and Rec employees?
I went fishing this morning.
You went fishing. You violently attempted to destroy the lives
of
some of our amphibian brothers and sisters.
But this is the problem that arrived.
Actually, they aren't amphibians. They're fish.
Okay. Anyway, we already caught dinner last night. Anyway, as I was attempting to go and get recyclables, I noticed...
To steal recyclables from other...
Yeah, what a fucking crime.
Well, I understand that some recyclable securing is not theft. It is simply taking what is given by other people, whereas others have been seized by the city as some sort of their right to
and then
make
ones
moolah
that are all
boolah.
Along the beach, too.
Yeah, well, anyway, they didn't even harass me about that. But anyway... So I stopped my fishing probably around 8 o'clock, and I noticed the park and rec guy driving around. And I felt, you can feel an eye on you when somebody's scoping you out, So I pulled my fishing pole up around 8 o'clock, and I put my little vest on. It's my little safety vest, my reflector vest, right?
This is a yellow, orange, and gray kind of stripe.
And I have my vest, gloves on.
And you have your, which is a sort of sometimes worn by highway workers.
Yeah, workers.
And you also have the blue, the baby blue gloves worn by Santa Cruz police officers when they touch the criminal, dirty homeless people and other suspects that they manhandle.
This is my story, Red. You can tell my story in a minute. Anyway, so I put my vest on, and I got my bag, all right? So I'm walking over to where I think I'm going to get bottles and cans, but I notice that there's something following me around. And
Someone.
And it was this guy with a mustache, big old cheeky face and stuff, and he basically runs, when you have to do community service and you choose the boardwalk.
Yeah,
this is the guy that runs.
What's his name? Do you know?
I have no idea.
And this was he in a business suit? Was
no,
he
in, it's just regular. It was in a Santa Cruz truck. Santa Cruz.
And was he in civilian clothes or did he have a
civilian
uniform?
Civilian clothes. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
This is one of those white Parks and Rec trucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Yeah. Pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
So and I'm walking down the boardwalk and I'm heading towards the beach, and he goes, "Hey, you in the jacket, come here." I'm like, well, actually, at first he said, hey, you in the vest. And I waved to him, right? And I kept on walking, you know, because I realized the guy's hawking me and stuff. So I keep walking and walking. And I cross the road, and he's on the other side of the road where I crossed. And he yells at me, hey, you, stop, come here. And I was like, I ain't stopping, and I'm walking off the boardwalk. Leave me alone. And he goes, I'm going to call the police. You're going to call the police about what? You're wearing a vest, and you're confusing us. We don't know if you're working for us or not. I was like, who the hell are you? Leave me alone. You're a weirdo, dude. So I walked off the boardwalk, you know, and I went on the beach, and I cleaned up trash that was on the beach, and I found recyclables.
Did you find any needles or feces?
Not any needles or feces this time.
No needles or feces. Any
yeah, well, I will sometimes.
Large amounts of money, which you possibly want to pass on to
no,
free radio,
well,
which needs...
Well, only if I attempted to rob somebody, I might have... No, yeah, I don't do that.
Hands we find.
But anyway, so after walking
watch
the beach...
Watch the jokes, we're in a difficult period of time.
After walking the beach and coming back and cleaning it up, I also, besides recycle, I do clean up the beach. If I find plastic, and I put it
yes.
in garbage cans.
Yes.
You know? And I respect my Mother Ocean and my Mother Earth, you know, and this is part of what I do
and
when I recycle.
And I might say I don't smell alcohol about your breath, Crow, which is a refreshing change.
Well, I have been drinking, so you're
wrong. Oh, dear. So much for my nose.
You're just not close enough yet.
No, no kissing. Go ahead.
No kissing.
Stop it. Anyway, on the way back, okay, the guy said, hey, look, I told you you can't be walking around with the vest on. And I was like, look, this is my vest, dude. And all of a sudden, this little tall young kid comes out, and he goes, hey, dude, you're acting like an asshole, yelling and stuff. And I was like, you guys are attacking me. Of course I'm going to be yelling, you know? And I was like, you guys are pathetic. You know, my kids are junior lifeguards. They surf in this water. We've been here for 20 years. You know, I'm originally from Jersey, and I got slaughtered from the hurricane. I could tell you about that, but that's something else, you know, homeless people now. But anyway, and so I just told the guy, look, you guys are out of your minds, okay? You guys need to chill off and back off on me, all right? So I went back to an RV. I pulled my fishing pole out of the water, okay? Loaded it up.
Where were you parked with the fishing pole?
I was parked on the pier.
Illegally?
Illegally parked
on the pier.
Took up like 10 spaces.
Are you allowed to fish? Do you have your permit? Your
don't
fishing?
Need a permit on the board, the pier.
We'll try to change that. Go ahead.
But I... Yeah, no. We do legally fish, and we do illegally pluck cans and bottles. Anyway,
so in other words, you're trying to essentially suck off the land instead of becoming a part of the
suck
important
off the big American dick.
You know, you're destroying the fish population instead
clean
of
it up
instead
right.
of buying
I'm
from Walmart.
I
mean, now, come on,
yeah. I'm destroying the recycling
well, you
centers.
Could be, you oh, could yeah. be purchasing. You could be purchasing food from local
oh,
merchants
that's right.
instead.
I could buy my food.
Yes,
that's right.
exactly. You
instead
could
growing
little
my own
green
food,
certificates.
Collecting
come,
my own food.
You know, if you work hard, you keep your nose clean.
Some people that can't kill their own animals. That they eat, you spineless bastards, because I'm a vegetarian.
Soon it's going to be illegal to grow a tomato.
I know. You got to buy them. Buy!
Well, there is genetically engineered tomatoes, which are shown to be much better for you and also
oh, yeah.
also much redder.
Yeah, so when you yeah. die, you get preserved longer.
You get
right?
dyed with the dye. You die with the dye. And the dye did I die.
Anyway,
and
while I was waiting for you in the studio, right?
Yeah.
This is one of the greatest conclusions of the story is. These foreigners, they sound like they were French. I was walking my dog in front of the studio over here. And they say, oh, hello, can you tell me where the boardwalk is? And I was like, well, come over here, make a left, and I'll tell you. So you're safe, you're not in the middle of the road, and I'm trying to tell you, you know, because a big old bus is coming. But they seen the reflective jacket, and they seen the gloves, so they felt comfortable talking to me. Because I looked like I was an official.
So you took them aside, you raped the daughter, and stole all their money.
No, it did not happen like that. Anyway, I just told them that they had to just turn around, go two lights down, make a right, and they were all happy.
Right.
So I get a good deed for today.
Mm-hmm.
But all the other times, it's
well, what about the police?
Rotten.
Didn't the police come and harass
no,
you and interrogate
no.
you?
No, the guy never called.
No, because
he was just trying to push my buttons so he could call the police on me for something. I mean, I was getting to the point where I was getting really pissed off.
But you were controlling yourself?
A little bit.
In spite of the alcoholic haze?
No, in spite of the yelling at them for harassing me and being dicks.
Well,
and
now,
they call me an asshole.
Well, now you've monopolized the mic, and quite coherently, I might add.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear what Red has to say about this.
Red,
you're were you around for this incident?
Oh, yeah, I was there. And I was there the other night when I called you, and I set up a city roadblock. There was a city road machine, the little sweeper machines coming around, and the vacuum was blown out. It was like Hiroshima going up, right? Oh, by the new fucking Sabercats arena.
Right. The Wildcats.
The Wildcats? Okay.
We think of them the North Dakota Wizards, as they were previously.
Yeah.
I'm
Whatever.
Told they were previously known.
Pussycats.
Now, before you go into this tale, which I think you did mention to me briefly on the on a phone call, I want you to... I want to take a brief musical break. We'll be right back. And by the way, for those who are listening, we're listening to Red Crow and Robert, and that's at 427-3772 if you wish to join this very freeform discussion. 427-3772. Area code, of course, is 831. 831-427-3772.
My black coat thrown over my blue nightgown. You drove too fast, the lights of the city flew past. How could I ever forget? Outside the morning was cool and wet. He had such chills, but still he lay there so still. 18 months old, so cold. We ran him in sight, lost, worrying, wondering. That hospital room, that blue. Screaming at dawn,
I was so upset.
Diana, wait, you never said we were too late. But I was a child, raising a child.
My life was set
that day that I lost you. It's clear as the day we met. How could I ever forget. Okay,
so that was a little something from Next to Normal. Next to Normal is a musical I've been playing selections from for the last few shows, and the name of that one was How Could I Ever Forget? And we're going to be playing some more as the show proceeds. And love it or leave it, as they say, or perhaps just turn it off or turn down the volume, whatever you'd like, or call in and complain. You are tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, and we're also a website you can reach us on but not get a stream at is freakradio.org. However, you want to get the stream, go to huffsantacruz.org and click on the web for this radio show, Tune In. It begins with the words tune in, and there's a longer numerical thing that follows that. In the studio with me is Red, who's going to talk, who was going to talk about, she's moving from barriers on the road to her own experience with housing. Red, you're a cancer survivor at the moment, right?
Yeah, but it came back, and it's terminal, and there's nothing good. They gave me, like, 9 to 10 years to live, or else they can cut the cyst. Breast cancer goes to your liver, your ovaries, or your spinal cord. And they said that if they cut it out, I could bleed out in 10 minutes, or else I could keep it and live 9 to 10 years. So it was my choice, right? Live 9 to 10 years. I talk about this homeless services center that was in the good times this week. That's a bunch of bull, right? Work not only to manage a homeless population or address the symptoms, or lack of food, showers, yeah, they do. Places to sleep for the few that get on the list, but actually in the homeless condition. Now, they're using a new approach by ending homelessness by prioritizing the most vulnerable people living on the streets for supportive housing. Now, I get Social Security, right? And my husband gets being a care provider. We have an income, and we recycle. It's a formula that has been shown, they said, to save more lives and cost the county less money. What, you got to bury more dead bodies? What's up with that? Their new approach was launched last spring in the form of 180/180 campaign, an initiative in which the county identified the most at-risk homeless individuals. That might be me with terminal cancer, right? Those who require the most emergency services is now working in getting them housing by 2014. Yeah. The goal is to transition people from a place where the cost of the county $500,000 per year in emergency services to supportive housing that costs only about $12,000 a year. That's saying from the HSC Executive Director, Monica Martinez. Because of the severe needs and inability to access preventative health care, the chronically homeless population ends up being taken to jails and shelters, hospitals and emergency rooms frequently over the course of the year, representing a disproportionate financial burden on the system or the rest of the homeless situation. Over an estimated 2,700. That's just who came up, you know, and not people that are hiding from fear of being arrested for being homeless or living on the streets of Santa Cruz. 2,700 people living on the streets of Santa Cruz, and you're not allowed to sleep at night. The stores are closed, the restaurants are closed, everywhere is closed. All you have to do is roam around and be feared and get a $160 ticket in case you fall asleep. Now, where do you go at night? Do you get to fall asleep? I don't. Yeah?
So let me ask you, Red, because you're looking at this article, and I actually have I've interviewed Phil Kramer, who's a sort of the local honcho in charge of the 180-180 program, which supposedly is going to, in every county, you know, they're going to find 180 of the most needy homeless or the people who are the most, you know, alcoholically disabled, and mostly it's who are costing the county the most money because they're arrested the most and causing problems.
I'm on the 180-180 list, but I've been on it for 9 years.
Well, you probably haven't been on the 180-180 list. You've been on some other list.
Well, I'm at the top of the list, but it's I mean,
in other words, I think 180-180 is a new program, but I think you're talking
last
about
spring.
I think you're talking about another program which
right
you've
here.
Been on. Which
that's
is
spring.
Right, but I mean the 9 years that you've been on, you're talking about Section 8, aren't you?
Section 8 has been closed down for 3 years.
In the sense that the waiting list is
there is no waiting list. Yeah, and he said the ongoing process would get individuals housed by connecting them with federal housing subsidies, like Section 8, which has been closed down for 3 years. The waiting list.
Well, when you say it's closed down, there obviously is a waiting list.
No waiting list.
Well, the point is there are obviously people who are on a list waiting to get into Section 8 housing, right?
Nope. They placed it on that. No waiting list at all.
Well, that's interesting.
I've been going to them for three years.
Well, that may be. Maybe they're not accepting new people on the waiting list, but I'm sure there probably is an old waiting list.
Well, you're just not old enough.
You know, you should have. You know, you got to. You know, you should have come maybe 15 years ago, and you'd be in better shape.
My birthday's in 3 days.
Well, there you are. You're getting older, so maybe when you're right before you die of cancer, you'll get into.
I want a balloon for my birthday.
So, are you actually on a waiting list for Section 8 or not?
No, because it wouldn't let me. I've been going there for 3 years, and they said there is no waiting list. It's closed down. And but I'm on the 180 list with Paul for the Coral Street Housing Service place.
The Homeless Persons Health Project?
Yeah, but that's been going on since last spring. And they're taking care of 11 people per month.
Is it 11 people per month? Is it 11 people per month or is it 11 people total?
No, it's just 11 people per month all during the fall. Yeah. And so, like, I'm at the top of the list. You know, I've been waiting for 9 years. And then, yeah, take care of several more people each month through the fall from Director Monica Martinez. Yeah. And the HSC is working with the Housing Authority, the County of Santa Cruz, to direct more housing vouchers for the vulnerable homeless population. Yeah, well, what about me? I'm the most vulnerable? Yeah.
I would say cancer makes you pretty vulnerable, and of course, living in a vehicle is also makes you vulnerable.
Yeah. But with no water.
You know. I think it's interesting. You're also another person came into the studio two months ago. Andrea Morgan, who was
on a
walker and so forth, and she slept outside, got robbed. She was evicted.
I've been robbed. I've been beaten.
You've also been robbed.
I have a scar across my head when I got cracked in the head by a 40-ounce glass bottle.
When were you robbed?
Last year, last fall.
How did that happen?
We were sleeping out on the levee underneath some trees, and this guy that had an apartment, a veteran that had an apartment, came over and goes, Spell my name. I said, you know what? Go back to your apartment and let me catch a nap because it's daytime and I'm out of sleep. And he goes, oh, yeah. And he had a 40-ounce glass bottle and he threw it at my head and he cracked it open and I have a permanent scar going all the way down.
What happened to him? Did he get charged with this crime?
No, he ran away. He ran away and my husband Crow and Ashanti came and saved me and they helped staunch the wound.
But he had an apartment nearby, didn't he?
Yeah, but he lost it. He robbed Crow of his mother's inheritance when he invited us to watch the football game and fell asleep on the couch. And he went in Crow's pocket because Crow went and bought him a beer and bought him some McDonald's food. And he saw the money in his pocket.
It sounds like you guys had a relationship.
He went and he stole his money out of his pocket when he was sleeping. And then they were all partying. We went back there to get the money, and they were all broke.
Red, it sounds like you guys had a prior relationship with this guy. So he knew you before he came?
We took care of him. We put him on his bus. We fed him.
Yeah,
we sheltered him.
This thing's going to fall apart.
Yeah, and he robbed us. And cracked my head open with a bottle.
Right, so you yourself don't, you guys live in a vehicle. You don't use the Homeless Lack of Services Center like the Armory or the Paul Lee Loft. You ever tried to use those services?
I got a little kitty cat.
Sorry, say again?
I got a kitty cat.
You have a pet, so they won't allow pets.
Right. Yeah, we found her. She was homeless. A little black kitty cat. She was homeless at the airport, meowing. And we finally called her after 2 weeks. And we even put down a letter while she went right to it. She's already trained and everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I call her Amber because she has big golden eyes. This is something I want to say. On December 20th, the eve of winter solstice, the Homeless Persons Health Project will hold the annual homeless memorial in which they will pay tribute to the homeless people who have lost their lives on the street.
Yeah, that happens every year. So, I mean, you're reading this article, but what's the point you want to make about this stuff, Red?
Where's the real help?
Yeah.
It's not there.
Well, that's the point.
Where's the real help? It's all...
Well, the reason I...
Food, you know, you go get dinner, and you can take showers, and you get on a list with sleep, but you can have a pet, and then if you're a couple, you have to be separated, And you can't bring any stuff there, and you're going to lose your vehicle on the street from the abatement guy. You know, you can't sleep in your car. You can't sleep in the woods. You can't sleep any freaking where at night. But everybody else in the world can. But people go to work. We have jobs. We have jobs.
What kind of work do you do?
What I do? I'm a disaster worker.
What do you mean?
From over there, up on Delavega Park. Disaster works. I was disaster worker for them. And also, I was the donation coordinator for the Women's Health Center.
How long ago were you working? Of course, you're disabled
until
now.
Until I got cancer.
And when was that?
I did it about 2 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
So right now you're a disabled person. The reason I brought up Andrea is because what happened was she eventually started pursuing, phoning and demanding action from the city council and from Don Lane, the mayor.
Right.
And Lane eventually, according to what she spoke about on the air, contacted CAB, Community Action Board, and I don't know if it was Paul Brindell or whoever's taking his place, if that's, I think he's on vacation, I'm not sure if he's on vacation or not, and got 2/3 of her rent subsidized at a motel for the winter because she's disabled, and she feels it as a local in Santa Cruz is disabled, you know, and needs this kind of help. That was something that she demanded. And the point here is that the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and I think that, you know, maybe what you're doing here is you're making some squeaks.
Right.
You know, you're saying what's going on with this, and you're also talking, I think, about the general population.
Yeah.
The problem is, even though the squeaky wheel gets the grease as individuals, it doesn't really address the broader issue. I know, though, that, you know, when I've suggested, and it's been suggested by Huff, that there be a campground or a parking lot that people could park in and then leave.
Exactly.
Now, you favor that, but I don't know if Crow favors that.
No,
Crow,
I don't want to hang out with other homeless people.
So you and Crow disagree on this issue, I think.
Yeah, we do.
I don't want to hang out with other homeless people. I think there ought to be. I stink enough myself.
Some place,
too, where you have some kind of rules, you know, and people have to, like, clean up your stuff, you know. There's stuff and your potty, and just somewhere where you can be safe,
We heard in the previous, you probably didn't hear about it, but the show was before our show, which is, I was describing, it's Unreported World, talked about a couple of British reporters went through the United States talking to homeless folks. They said they found 40 tent cities in Nashville alone, which was astonishing. I've heard of four or five in Fresno, but I haven't heard of, and a couple in San Francisco, but
a couple in LA too.
But 45,
I don't know how many 40
in one place seems, you know, I was amazing. Again, this might could have been, you know, exaggeration. I don't know if they visited 40. I think they heard that was how many there were.
How many people are homeless in New Jersey now?
Doesn't it tell you there's some kind of problem going on with the United States, giving all the money to other countries?
For sure. You know, but the issue, I think, you know, that I think I'm losing my train of thought here, but it'll come back to me like a choo-choo that returns when it should. You're in the studio. I'm in the studio, and you're listening to the three of us in the studio. It's Red and Crow.
Yeah, we're about ready to go because we got to go.
Red and Crow live in their vehicle, and they came in to report this sort of incident with the Parks and Rec guy.
Bullshit. Yeah.
And also, I mean, I guess
in the homeless situation.
The situation. What's interesting to me is when there was an Occupy movement last year, and I know you had your disputes with Occupy too.
Well, yeah. What they did.
They never came up with a reason.
Well, for 2 months, people had a place to live.
And
all the college students went home.
Right. Well, they had
a place to live and sell drugs, right?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how many of them were selling drugs.
Oh, lots. Trust me.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of crank.
It was bad there.
Well, I don't know. I was around there.
I know.
Well, I heard different stories, too.
No, I know.
But I don't care what their business was.
I care
that they had a place to sleep.
Okay.
Without being arrested and ticketed. No, they slept there, man. They slept there.
They still never drugs there.
I think this is between me and you.
Homeless situation and drug sales.
I think if we were to poll the number of people who sold drugs in that area, we'd probably find less than 5 or 10% of the people did.
But I would agree with you just because I like the percentage.
I'd say 95%.
I'm not going to say anymore.
It's easy for you. It's easy It's easy for Take Back Santa Cruz and you and the city to smear people with this thing about drug sales. As far as I'm concerned, though, the issue for me is whether people have a legal or a de facto legal place to sleep. And they did for 2 months. Now, there's another issue, which you're pointing out, which has to do with selling nasty drugs that fuck people up. That's another issue, and I think that's an important issue, too. But I'm talking about the shelter part of the issue, because I'm asking the two of you, it is an important issue.
People get $160.
What I'm asking is, though, because I'm trying to understand, because there are differences in the homeless community here in this very studio between people about how this issue should be addressed by the city.
Right.
One is just leave people alone who take care of the area they're around.
Yeah.
And this was proposed, for example, by my ex-housemate, Yon Golder, one time, who said what people should be ticketed for is they should be ticketed if they leave a mess in their area or if they if they camp in an area that is messy. In other words, they have to clean it up before they actually camp there and leave it clean.
Yes.
If that's done and if the environment is respected and there's no other health and safety problems, that should be the camping ban.
Yeah.
That's one proposal. Another proposal, and maybe you could have both, Red, is have parking lots open at night for those who do want to go park in a parking lot, or campgrounds for those who want to go to campgrounds who don't agree with you or agree with you, Red. So you could have both. And I don't think, and it would be much less expensive, I think, than the current situation.
Yeah. The camping ban needs to be killed, and that's my point. We've been working on this ever since I've known you. It needs to be done because there is laws for littering. There is laws for,
Problem with the current littering law is they can't prove you littered, and therefore they say we need the camping ban. So if you have a new law that states if you're in an area that
area
and you're sleeping and there's litter there, then you can be given a sleeping in a littered area or some such thing.
That's going to be your little spot.
But this whole camping thing, it violates our human rights, period.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's something much deeper here, the fact that you have huge amounts of resources being given to a very few people, and everybody else is suffering.
They're doing something great,
Well, they're making money. And
they're making money.
And nothing really is going on.
So let me ask you, Red, because I want you butting in all the time, Crow, Mr. Patriarch, for sure. But you're a male butted like the two of us. We'd love to wave our penises around on the air.
Yes, I do.
It's so exciting.
I have great
penises.
But you, Red, what do you think? Would you favor... You certainly probably favor an end of the camping ban, but you have a difference with Crow on the opinion of setting up a campground, having a parking areas,
like the tent cities, but have it regulated. We have some rules to clean up your crap, get every crap. Maybe have a porta potty, or a portable shower there. And people can't afford $35 a night,
which is the current price of campground areas.
Yeah.
Well, can't you get a spot and split it five ways or six ways?
Only in state parks, you can only stay there for, I believe, only 2 weeks before you have to never come back again for another year.
Can't fit that many people.
I'm not sure, but there was some restriction, I know.
So anyway, it's not an end-all solution.
You're not like a bunch of Mexicans put you in a drawer.
And I know you two want to leave, but let me ask, if anybody wants to call and ask a question of Crow or Red, because they do want to leave, do give a call right now to 427-3772. 427-3772 if you want to ask or comment. If you've had experiences outside or you have friends who are outside or you just have some thoughts about this whole thing. You've been watching it if you're a local resident it's been going on for decades.
Hurry up, I have to find somewhere to go pee.
And there's actually a restroom right down the hall.
Anyway, I did an illegal activity again when I was outside. I walked my dog without a leash and a collar.
This is the crime wave is spreading around town.
Kitty cats!
Uh-oh, a catmonger.
We're trying to teach cat to walk without a leash.
Anyway, we're out of here. Any questions delivered to this guy over here?
Yeah, I will pass on your thoughts to Crow and Red, who get in touch with me occasionally.
Hey, love you.
Thanks for coming in.
We're your athletic
supporter.
You're our athletic supporter. You keep my balls rolling. Okay. Thank you very much, you two.
Love you.
All right.
Was that good?
Oh, yeah. Could have been worse. All right.
Get out of here.
Thanks for coming in. All right. Take care, you two. And you are tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. It's time for a musical breather, and I'll be back. You can call in if you'd like, or just keep listening, or maybe do something else. That's up to you.
It's gonna be fine. It's gonna be fine. Gotta go back to the doctor cause we caught it just in time. We'll take the pills, we'll pay the bills, we'll do more ECT.
Our son.
It's gonna be good, you'll see.
What was his name?
It's gonna be good, you'll see.
What was his name?
It's gonna be good, 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 gonna be good,
gonna be good, gonna be good, gonna be good, gonna be good, gonna be good,
gonna be good, gonna be good, gonna be good, gonna be psychiatric hell, or living with pill taking, and ECT, of course, is electroconvulsive therapy or shock therapy. A little more of a musical break, and we will continue with probably interviews and your many, many phone calls, which I know you're just lining up and ready to ring.
Why stay? Why stay? So steadfast and stolid. And stoic and solid, for day after every day, why stay? Why stay? Why not simply give in and get on with living? Cause everyone knows you tried, but somehow something died on the way. Tell me why you stay. Why stay? Why stay? Enduring and coping and hurting and hoping for day after fucking day. Why stay? Why stay? Why not simply end it? We'd all comprehend it, and most of the world would say it. Be better off that way, to be free. And maybe so is she.
A promise, a voice says forever. A voice says whatever may come, we'll come through. And who can know how, when all I know now to be true is this promise that I make to you. A question, a boy wonders whether
a boy wants
the shoes stay together the way that they stay. For year after year, for love or from fear, either way, that's the promise that I made that day.
Here's what I say to the girl who was burning so brightly, like the light from Orion above. And still I will search for her nightly. If you see her, please send her my love. And the boy was a boy for all seasons.
The boy is
that
lost.
Boy is one love to me now.
So
and the man has forgotten his reasons, but the man still remembers his vow.
A promise a man says forever. A man says I'll never regret or let you. The promise I made to stay. And I stay true, knowing one day we'd remember that joy. You'd remember that girl, I'd remember that boy. To be true, the promise I made, I'll make it brand new. The promise that I made to you.
I am what might be.
Yeah, and that's more from Next to Normal. It's going to be good, and why stay? So, here I am alone in the studio, and again, if you want to call in and ease the pain of my loneliness, the number is 831-427-3772. Just got an email from Becky Johnson, a local activist and blogger, also a notorious criminal as one of the Santa Cruz 11, along with myself. That's the group charged with reporting on, being around, supporting the protests at the Wells Fargo Bank, which is continuing its its practices nationwide, foreclosing on thousands and thousands of people as part of this national scam, for which it's almost a government-subsidized scam because they're suffering no real penalties in terms of any criminal prosecutions. And no real significant changes in policy demanded, although I guess there's been some state legislation passed that's going to ban this dual-track stuff where they're telling you with the one hand, here, we'll give you a loan modification, but also, we're foreclosing on you at the same time, but don't pay this off until that happens, and then, it looks like your home's foreclosed on too late, that sort of thing. A lot of that's been going down, and there have recently been foreclosures and resistance to foreclosures, which is more important in Monterey or in the area south, either North County, Monterey County, I believe. And I don't have a lot of information on that, but it was, if you're interested in that, go to Occupy Monterey, the website, and check it out. I may follow that a little bit myself. More. That's the kind of direct action that groups of people were coming together to do at Occupy Santa Cruz and Occupy Wall Street spinoffs throughout the country about a year ago. And it was crushed by police who crushed the camping activity, which is traditional protest in countries like, in Egypt. It happened yesterday and the day before. Massive crowds came out to oppose the Masri, his name is, the... was it Masri? I'm not sure. The head of the provisional government in Egypt, who suddenly declared he had the power to annul court decisions and ignore the legislature until a new constitution and constituent assembly was cooked up in the indefinite future, which kind of united liberals and old-time Mubarak supporters in Egypt. But the protest, traditionally protest, has been through and successful protest in the last year in some foreign countries, and ongoing protests in other countries like Spain and Greece have been to occupy areas, and of course it's traditional in Latin America to have huge numbers of people come out and block criminal corporate conspiracies. They're usually in collusion with the government to rip off vast numbers of people, seize land, seize resources. Or continue create austerity programs that cut services to people in order to fully fund bankers' bad investments. It's a natural thing to do. It's an effective thing to do in some places, apparently. And that's why I think there's been such heavy and intensified repression against it all over the country, the Occupy movement, and against it in Santa Cruz. I've never had felonies charged against me for reporting on an occupation. There have been many occupations in the past, temporary occupations, that tried to draw the public attention to bad behavior by authorities or by other groups that were in powerful groups. And, you might get arrested. You might even face a trial. Never been convicted here in Santa Cruz of any criminal behavior around those occupations. Because they were actually, I think, beneficial to the community. I think the Wells Fargo occupation was, in its own way, beneficial to the community, or at least attempted to be, in attempting to establish a community center, possibly a homeless shelter for the winter, focus on Wells Fargo's abusive behaviors, and instead of, the police initially, I think, dealt with it as best they could in terms of maintaining a peaceful attitude. They didn't beat anybody up. Well, there was one guy beaten up off to the side. But nobody actually in the building was beat up. A lot of that was not because the police were so wonderful, but because there were so many people supporting, and the police wanted to avoid both property damage downtown and subsequent lawsuits, which is understandable and prudent. However, they then, in order to satisfy this right-wing riptide that's been running through the power structure for the last year, at least, and probably for the last couple of years, you might even say for the last decades, but it's been particularly prominent in the last year or two, they went into these felony prosecutions for the Santa Cruz 11, and this prosecution of Isaac Collins is another example of this. It's also, I can't prove that it's because Isaac Collins is African-American and because he was a member of Occupy in a very prominent role, he's being persecuted, the only person arrested, the only person facing felony charges of the 1,000 or more white guys, and no doubt folks of color, up on campus on April 20th smoking marijuana to protest the absurd, abusive, and totally antiquated drug war, drug prohibition war, marijuana prohibition laws that some states have already rejected, as I mentioned before. But, you know, it seems to me that there is this massive crackdown going on against occupations, and it's still going on, and that is going to be a theme, at least, of how I'm going to publicize what is happening in the Santa Cruz 11 as the court cases come up again. I mean, it's not really about these court cases. These court cases impact me personally and 10 other people, four of whom have already had their dismissed charges laid aside, but could conceivably be dragged in again, as could anybody else, if the police suddenly decide, oh, this guy was in the building, therefore arrest him. Therefore, charge him with felonies punishable by up to 7 years in prison. It's outrageous, and it's incredible. It's a real attack on the right to assemble, the right to speak freely, the right to raise issues that the police and the local authorities and the local banks don't want you to raise. And it's also a feather in your cap for politicians who are running on the ever-popular harsh on crime theory, where crime is suddenly defined in a way that excludes white-collar crime and excludes the real criminals who are running the war machine and running the banking ripoffs and running the environmental ripoffs, but goes into, for sure, the petty crimes, the people who are trying to survive at the bottom, or people who are engaged in drug selling at the bottom in order to survive or live or profit. You know, let's be honest about that. So, Isaac Collins going to trial. We'll be learning some more about that on Thursday. I believe he's telling me he goes to the court on Friday. It's just an arraignment, but he's looking for support. The Santa Cruz 11, seven of them come back to court in early January, and I'll be talking about that as well as we proceed. And hopefully there's also stuff going on in Davis, which I began to look at. UC Davis had sit-ins, and there are ongoing cases there that are getting publicized, not as widely as they should be, and I think we need to be a lot more vigorous and united and specific about what's happening in a lot of these specific cases. But again, the issue isn't, as I was saying, is not the court cases so much as the resistance we need to mount to the general atmosphere of repression, which takes in such things as hysteria against the homeless and the massive sweeps that are going on around the city, have been for the last 6 months, the curfews that I've mentioned before that have sprung up at the courthouse, library, police station, levee, parks. Those have been in place for quite a while, the last two, but the other ones are recent. And in direct response to peaceful protests that the city did not want to use the criminal process to go through and address in terms of dealing with the laws that make it illegal to sleep at night, which are completely absurd, but also and abusive of the Constitution as much as the curfew laws and the 647E lodging law. But we have our own city sleeping ban, 636.010A, in Santa Cruz, created by the Santa Cruz City Council at the behest of the Santa Cruz Police Department to give them more tools to use against poor people they want to interrogate, search, and so forth, which is all just fine for people who like to regard everybody outside as a potential criminal element that has to be monitored, controlled, and preferably driven away. That's the kind of mentality you can read in the Morning Sentinel, which I just got a heads up from Becky Johnson, who refers me to this long article, which is a puff piece for Mayor Don Lane, who will soon be ex-mayor, but he'll still be on the council. The article by J.M. Brown, which talks about Lane's involvement, his rhetoric about the homeless, and his involvement as, I guess, he's the director of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, and he's a he came into office and spouting rhetoric about how the homeless should be taken care of and all the woe betide the homeless and look at the situation they're in. But there's not a word from J.M. Brown about the attacks on homeless people that have been going on by the authorities with the tacit, well, without real opposition from Don Lane. It is true there is a quote in this story that says he doesn't think moving homeless people, pushing people away, doesn't mean they disappear. It means they move some distance, a few miles, a few cities. They still exist. They'll still be homeless. And we have this, what I regard as, it looks like a hokey deal coming up on December 1st, the conference called Creating Smart Solutions to Homelessness, a Countywide Community Engagement Summit. And this is this is sort of like an Obama-like attempt to talk to the Republicans about things, is what it looks like to me. I mean, you know, Obama, instead of, you know, simply saying, all right, single-payer health, you know, cut the military budget, get the fucking troops out, saying, let's talk about this with the Republicans and get them on board. And, of course, he ends up getting on board with the Republicans expanding the war, cutting the Constitution. But, again, we knew he was going to do this anyway because he was always a centrist Democrat in the mold of Clinton, who essentially they abandoned the liberal protestations of the Democratic Party. Lane does the same thing around homelessness, and that's what I'm afraid this summit is likely to do. I've actually signed up for the summit, though, at the request of some activists, and I will be there. That's, you can, too. You can always go to this summit, Creating Smart Solutions to Homelessness. I think there'll be some food there. It's at Cabrillo College next Sunday. You got to go online to sign up. There may be another way to do it if you're homeless or you can't get access to a computer. If you want to sign up and you're interested and you can't do it, call me at 423-HUFF. Come to the HUFF meeting on Wednesday, although I think we're getting pretty close to the deadline, or if we haven't already passed it. But you can just show up there next week. But this Homelessness Community Engagement Summit, it's like when you're trying to include the Klan in your discussions, you know, as though that's really part of the, you know, you can soothe the savage beasts. And in fact, you know, there is really, I think it's ironic that lower-income people who were members of the Klan, the lower-income people who, you know, who are homeless-phobic bigots, they actually share the same problems homeless people have, which is oppression from the 1%, as I would describe it, oppression from the institutions that are oppressing all of us. And yet, in this kind of a situation, when you're simply narrowly focused on the homeless problem, as though it's a homeless problem, what you're really doing is you're giving credibility to the mythology of the right that there, you know, we need more police, we need to enforce drug laws more strictly, need to drive homeless campers out of the area because camping is illegal. That the only homeless people worth supporting are a very small minority who are the truly homeless, the truly poor. That, you know, that somehow the homeless have a cushy situation, and that there is a safety problem with the homeless because of the Collins killing and then this recent killing of this guy called Chief on the railroad tracks. This mythology, when in fact, you know, the reality is there's a lot more abuse against people outside than there is against the house community. And the house community provides a much greater number of crimes. Although it depends how you define crimes. If you define sleeping as a crime, sure, homeless people are the big-time criminals. There's no question about it. But that's part of the problem. This kind of definition, this twisted definition that's used, is something that you don't even want to begin to agree with. Hence the whole problem of so-called homeless and drug courts, where people are supposed to feel very grateful that if they go into homeless court and they get all their tickets dismissed by pleading guilty and doing a little bit of community service and get it expunged from their record, when, of course, the people who are prosecuting them are the ones who should be charged with criminal conspiracy to deprive people of their civil rights. When it's, you know, the definition of sleeping or drug use as a crime is itself a crime. That is the crime. The calling these people, criminalizing people for this kind of behavior, is it's a profit-making activity for a lot of people, and it is also a form of lifestyle enforcement for others, and it's just wrong. And the question is at this homelessness summit is, when they're talking about homelessness, I don't know what they're going to be talking about. If they got Don Lane heading the whole thing and Monica Martinez, people have already surrendered to the Collins mythology, the Collins killing mythology that's being pushed by Downtown Association, Santa Cruz Neighbors, Take Back Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Police Department. These groups that want to increase their power to regulate and remove poor people from the outside areas, to remove them from the downtown public assembly areas. That's what they want to do. That's clearly, it's a gentrification move, it's a NIMBY move, and has very little to do with real security. And that is, you know, Annalisa Cube is invited to come on the show. She's one of the co-founders of Take Back Santa Cruz. So is Pamela Comstock. I'll send her an email today inviting her to come and talk on the air about issues. And the only time I had a conversation with her, she was very friendly. I mean, she was actually very nice. She was getting battered by the D-cell opponents, properly battered by the D-cell opponents, but in a strangely chivalrous mood. I said, well, you know, if you don't, she hasn't learned that much about it. I don't know. I mean, I have had very little contact with Comstock and the Take Back Santa Cruz folks. But the article that I'm referring to with the Don Lane Sentinel puff piece, which really is what I began this conversation with, strangely makes no mention, though it talks about the homeless, of the attacks on homeless people and the destruction of homeless property and the lack of homeless shelter. That's just not really an issue. Or the criticisms of the homeless lack of services center from the left. None of it is there. It's all right-wing criticism. Actually, that's what you get if you read the comments that followed. Abuse of hard drugs. All these homeless are abusing drugs. They live in Santa Cruz. Must disrupt the drug traffic. All these old, useless nostrums and fears that keep coming up again and again that are used endlessly, usually on election eve, an hour after the election. Smart solutions to homelessness is the latest sort of buzzword being used by Monica Martinez and other folks who somehow feel that if they repackage old shit in new wrapping that it's going to get a better reception. Instead of addressing the real old shit, the real old problems that really need to be dealt with and swept away, criminalization of the poor people for being poor, criminalization of sleepers for sleeping, criminalization of campers for camping when they have no options, a lack of basic social services. Instead of that, you get this, we'll stash away 180 of this, the county's, I counted 8,000 to 10,000. They counted much less homeless. The cities, I counted 1,500 to 2,000. They counted slightly less homeless people. And that's going to be something we should really spend all our time working on, because we're all wanting to end homelessness. That's what Monica Martinez put out as her sort of propaganda line when she spoke at Calvary Episcopal's candidate forum a month or two ago. Monica Martinez is the head of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. I'm still trying to get straight information on what's going on with people there regarding supporting folks who are get camping tickets even though there's no space or place for them to go. And Steve Plaich has given me secondhand reports, but I have not yet seen one letter that says our shelter was full, or one receipt that says, one documented piece of paper that says this person's on a waiting list, so apply the law to them, which says if they're on a waiting list, their tickets should be dismissed, and they should not be, don't bother them. The law doesn't say don't bother them, but it says their tickets should be dismissed if they're on a waiting list for the Homeless Lack of Services Center or the River Street mini shelter, as I call it. So I guess I will be probably not doing my show next week, or maybe I'll go in late to this homelessness smart solutions summit that they're having. I mean, it's Linda LeMaster, who was recently convicted of essentially being at a protest at 4 in the morning and trying to help somebody and leaning over and lying there with a blanket, faces 6 months in jail. wants people to come to this activity that's happening in a week, this summit. And, I want to be supportive of her, even though she and I take definitely different perspectives and different approaches on how to address or undress the bureaucrats that are fucking with people and ignoring the real issues and love to gabble all day and get paid all night for this kind of stuff. If she's making these requests, I think it's worth at least thinking about them. I thought about them, and I then signed up. We'll see what I'm going to do with it. Just a lot of bigotry and, just vicious personal venting on the Sentinel website. Johnny at the Harbor, lowlife, who is, typical guy who doesn't want to say who he is or she is. Bums, the only solution the losers understand is a little stick therapy. And the bums rush. Blah, 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 blah. And Angelica Beresford, who gives her name, says, ha ha, bumettes. Good summary of the situation. And I think the right-wing bigots have it right in understanding that this is a puff piece on Lane. It is a puff piece, and it is not a particularly helpful puff piece, because it doesn't address what are the real issues that Lane and these bigots are ignoring, which is lack of shelter, just lack of public services. That's the issue. It's not crime, it's not drug use, it's not Don Lane. He isn't really the problem. I mean, he's part of the problem, of course, but the problem is a failure to address these issues. And you can read a torrent of hatred on the Sentinel website after the puff piece by J.M. Brown that doesn't mention any of the abuses against homeless people that have been going on in the last 6 months and are well documented on the police blog, the Santa Cruz Department police blog. So, whoopee-doo. So, let's... I am not entirely sure if I played this before, but since we have a new council member, Micah Posner, who squeaked in, I'm not sure how close his victory was. I think he was the fourth down. There were four elected, and I think there were eight running, so he, squeak might not be the word. Here's Neptune, also known as Scott Graham. Scope it out, Scott, who I've had in the studio before. He's denounced Micah in the past. He's not a fan of Posner's. He was at the D-Cell Forum, probably one of the few forums worth attending, where Micah and others were addressing the issue of this very costly D-Cell thing that is coming up. I guess at that time, the Wizards and the $4 million boondoggle hadn't yet come up on the horizon, just suddenly showed up, and whoom, whoosh, suddenly it was in. Interesting. But here, at least, was a large issue where a lot of money was being proposed, and the candidates were being asked about it. And I interviewed people in the audience afterward, and I think I may have played some of this, but I'm going to play it again and encourage folks to give me your thoughts. If you're listening in and you have access to a phone, you want to call in, that would be great. If not, you'll get to hear more of my thoughts, which I do quite regularly.
Came in on the tail end. What did you think of this, what you heard?
Is there anybody's ass who Micah won't kiss?
Now, why did you say that? Now, he said you have to think outside the box once you get the box boxed in.
Well, he's been a fence sitter on almost every issue in front of city council, except issues where bicycles are making roads through the greenbelt, like Pogonip or Arana Gulch. But other than that, he sits on the fence on every other issue.
Well, aside from bad mouthing,
then he kisses Fred Keeley's ass, Don Lane's ass, Cynthia Matthews' ass, anybody's ass who he thinks will get him ahead.
A shocking, I don't know what to say. You left me speechless. Any other thoughts?
Well, I thought this forum was a little lame, but other than that,
What would you have liked to have heard ask?
Well, I would have liked to have, first of all, I was told that the people in the audience weren't going to be allowed to ask questions. And then I come in and the people in the audience are asking questions. So I don't know why I got the wrong information. Well, I would have came earlier.
Lamonic.
I would have tried to come earlier and
ask questions.
And ask the question, you know. And
what
that,
question would you have asked?
Is there anybody who's asked Micah isn't willing to kiss?
I doubt. I doubt you would have asked that question, Scott Graham. Anything else you wish to say before I leave you?
Well, why don't you ask Bob LaMonica some questions?
That might be ill-advised.
Bruce Bratton.
He's never asked anything meaningful to say. Yeah. We have a Cop Watch report from Gail Page. Gail.
And it's not true that Bob LaMonica never has anything meaningful to say. That sounds like an intemperate statement for me. But Bob is focused on some issues, and he also tends to change to some extent with the weather. He's often engages in spirited discussions with the talk show host who, in the past, has preceded me. That's Troublesome Thomas Levitt and the Wake Up Call. However, Thomas doesn't seem to have been able to make it to the studio the last few weeks, and I'm not sure if... Well, we're a little bit worried about the future of free radio. As regular listeners know, there's a real concern that the rent is outstripping our resources, and we're going to be in a position of having to leave in January. That may not be the case now, because we've raised our own fees for people who are using the studio, the broadcasters, and that may tide us over a month or two. But it's really pretty tight for us. Anyway, I'll give the mandatory commercial later, and I don't know if actually any people are responding to this. I hope some people are. If you're regular listeners and you want the show to continue, you should go online to freakradio.org and kick down some money. You know, you should if you want. Well, you might get lucky, and I'm hoping that we do get lucky and have this. This whole process continue, but it's a rent system. It's a rent racket, and people have to pay the rent here, and we do too. And we can afford $300 a month, and we are having to pay $500, and so we've gradually been leached down to nothing, and we have to give our two months' notice, and that's happening. So unless we get a change in the next month, then we otherwise don't know. Don't know what's going to happen. Anyway, Thomas Levitt has had a lot of conversations with Bob LaMonica on a number of issues. Bob has been an activist at a number of points in the past. He tends to get very passionate about certain focused issues, as do I, but often to the exclusion of other issues. One of his main issues is Mike Rodkin's board of directors membership at the American Civil Liberties Union, or the American lack of Santa Cruz Civil Liberties Union, which... in spite of Steve Plaich's membership drive, and I guess he's now the vice chair of the board of directors, has not been meaningfully effective in even getting public statements from the ACLU on issues other than the Santa Cruz 11. Santa Cruz 11 did get a statement, or at least I guess several of them got a statement, two of them at least. And I think there was another one about how they all deserve a fair trial and they're being overcharged. Not that the charges should be dropped, mind you, but there were some weeks. But, I mean, there was a statement of a kind about them. But in terms of the homeless issue, in terms of the civil liberties issues around town otherwise, in terms of the curfews, in terms of harassment of street performers downtown, in terms of... the abusive behavior of Trader Joe's and other businesses toward people petitioning in the parking lot areas, banning them from those areas, even ACLU canvassers themselves, in terms of abusive process at City Council, not a word from the ACLU. I think Steve Plaich was working on the issue of trying to get a statement around the mayor's trial, the civil trial against the mayors that I lost about a month ago, and I'm now trying to get a retrial on. It looks like we're going to be applying for a retrial there. And it's peculiar that the judge hasn't actually certified the case, indicating he may want a retrial, though that to me seems rather unlikely. But the... anyway, LaMonica, Bob LaMonica, as a local person, is... At least he calls into free radio. I want to tip my hat to him for that. And he tries to be active on a number of issues, some of which I agree with him on. And then he attacks me on the other ones, seems like a day after he supported me on the same issues. So it's strange. But people are passionate about different things, and you get your support where you can find it. And you try to give people credit where credit is due. At least that's what I do. Let's hear a little bit more of, this is from either September or October. It is a forum on DCEL to which the city council candidates were invited.
I got a phone call that across from the bottom driveway of the Palo Alto Medical Foundation, where Capitola Road hits Soquel by Jeffrey's restaurant, that a woman who was standing in the middle with a sign for oncoming traffic, as is often done by people, and people will hand money through their windows. I got a call that that woman was being cited by some person in an unmarked black government car.
A black Mariah, perhaps?
I don't know. I assume it was an undercover cop. I assume it was SCPD, but since it was an unmarked car, it's impossible to say. But it was pretty sad because, obviously, this is a very poor person, a woman standing there in the hot sun with her sign saying, you know, need money.
You naturally got out and demanded the cop shape up.
Well, I heard about it. I got a phone call about it.
You got a secondhand report.
Secondhand report.
What did you think of this forum? Oh, wait, here's Steve Plage, one of the city council candidates.
That's me.
Are you voting for Pamela Comstock?
I'm considering it, but I think I'll vote for Steve Plage instead.
What, four times?
I don't even know what's left over. I will vote for Rob Morris. Is he running?
No, there's no Morris running. So what did you think of the quality of the questions there, Plage? I didn't hear most of the forum.
Well, they were really overlong and not very well focused, unfortunately. They were mostly statements of the questioners rather than requiring kind of focused answers from the panelists. So I thought that was very difficult for people because there's so much information around desal and water supply and water demand that you really should be able to ask people more specific questions that reflect their knowledge. And that they didn't do that.
What question would you have asked if you were asking questions?
Well, I would have asked them what the city's water supply is in relation to what the water demand is and try to see how much water we use per capita as individuals, how much we thought we'd have to curtail in a severe drought year, how much water we think we should leave in Loch Lomond during each year that would prevent against a severe drought, things like that are kind of things that you would know if you kind of studied the issues. And the people like Pamela, to her credit, said, I don't know enough about this to give it a real, full answer. And so she didn't. And so I you know, she didn't make something up. I'll give you one thing for publication, that I am outraged by the fact that they let an obvious Micah Posner supporter come at the end and direct a question to him, so he got to make a 3-minute campaign statement at the end of a candidate form. That is horseshit.
Another attack on the much-beloved Micah Posner. Gail, are you going to defend this man before the... Gail's heading for the exit. Warrant in your view. Talking with.
Let me see. The. I think a question that should have been elaborated a little more revolves around this issue of bringing together all the facts from a variety of points of views. We just can't rely on the city water department to present all the facts and to gather them all because they are committed to desal as a position. So there needs to be some kind of an impartial way of bringing in facts from other sources.
What would you suggest this might be?
Well, what Don Lane in the last comment suggested, putting together some kind of a forum that would allow that.
Yeah, it sounds like an unfortunate example of... this is an earlier tape when things were not as... looks like we have a little more of this, but the desal issue is an important one. because now there is a vote required of the community, although apparently the city council can still spend millions of dollars on studies, but before they actually start the actual desal project, they have to have a vote of the community, which Don Lane opposed this idea of a mandated charter change to produce a required vote, thinking we should simply trust that the city council will allow a vote, and because it voted, it said it would allow a vote, and therefore it'll allow a vote. But, of course, a new council could change that by simply reversing that position. But now that the desal initiative is passed, there has to be a vote of the citizens, which is good, except, as I've mentioned before, they're still going to spend millions of dollars on this. And that seems to be, the Santa Cruz City Council will be meeting on Tuesday again. And today's Sentinel, or Sentinel, as they call themselves, was it today's or was it yesterday's? I think it was actually maybe yesterday's or the day before, talks about stuff coming up on the agenda. Let's see here. On Tuesday, the council will consider, according to J.M. Brown, extending the contract for the desal consultant Kennedy Jenks for up to $390,000. I'm not sure how many campgrounds that would fund. The city has already spent $1.4 million for the firm's technical input on the project since 2008, according to city records. In a report prepared for the council, Water Department Director Bill Kocher, or is it Coker, I'm not sure, said the company has worked on a pilot desal plant and the preliminary design for the proposed full-scale facility. Kennedy Jenks also played a role in developing an environmental analysis due this spring and helped to create public outreach materials. It's $1.4 million to do that. That's the budget of the Homeless Lackawanna Services Center for about 10 years for just these consultants, essentially providing PR backing for the city's pro-desal position, the city water department's desal position to build this multi-million dollar desal plant that has been opposed so strongly by numerous folks in the community, including me, though I've got to admit I'm always learning on this issue, and my mind could be altered on this one too. Next year, Coker said the company would work on ensuring the city's plans for disposing of the highly concentrated brine created when salt is removed from seawater match potential changes, making sure their plans match potential changes in state regulations. Kennedy Jenks also will work on a plan to offset greenhouse gases created by the plant. Why do all this before you actually have the citizenry approving it? The Kennedy Jenks contract was placed on the council's consent agenda of items, expected not to be controversial, but desal opponents quickly weighed in, urging the city to stop spending significant amounts on the project, obviously. The opponents note that 72% of the voters approved a November 6 ballot measure saying they wanted a future vote on the plant. That should indicate that the prospect for winning voter approval of desal is far from a slam dunk. Santa Cruz Desal Alternatives wrote in an email sent to supporters Thursday, given that desal may never be stopped, it seems prudent that the Santa Cruz City Council would make it a top priority to develop a plan B for drought security. If extension of the Kennedy Jenks contract is approved, the city's desal partner, Soquel Creek Water District, will share the cost. The two agencies have proposed building the plant as a way to guard against drought and reduce the use of freshwater sources to improve fish habitat and restore overdrafted aquifers. And there doesn't seem to be any comment on this story, but that's what's coming up to some extent, at least part of the city council agenda this coming Tuesday, 3 o'clock. Again, the consent agenda is the slam dunk, whip it through without any public discussion or debate, and we don't allow it unless the city council member agrees to take an item and separate it from the consent agenda so it can be discussed separately. Something that city council sometimes does and sometimes doesn't do. And I'm going to look this over because I may be at that meeting on Tuesday just for the heck of it. We'll see. Let's take a musical break, and I will be back. And hopefully so will you.
Why stay? Why stay? So steadfast and stolid, and stoic and solid, for day after every day. Why stay? Why stay? Why not simply give in and get on with living? Cause everyone knows you tried, but somehow something died on the way. Tell me why you stay. Why stay? Why stay? Enduring and coping and hurting and hoping for day after fucking day. Why stay? Why stay? Why not simply end it? We'd all comprehend it and most of the world would say she's better off that way. To be free. And maybe so is she.
A promise, a voice says forever. A voice says whatever may come, we'll come through. And who can know how, when all I know now to be true is this promise that I make to you. A question, a boy wonders whether
a boy wants
the shoes stay together the way that they stay. For year after year, for love or from fear, either way. That's the promise that I made that day.
Here's what I say to the girl who was burning so brightly, like the light from Orion above. And still I will search for her nightly. If you see her, please send her my love. And the boy was a boy for all seasons.
The boy is
that
lost.
Boy is far lost to me now.
So
and the man has forgotten his reasons. But the man still remembers his vow.
A promise a man says forever. A man says I'll never regret or let you. A promise I made to stay, and I stay true.
Knowing one day we'd remember that joy. You'd remember that girl, I'd remember that boy. To renew the promise I made. The promise that I made to you.
I am more than memory. I am what might be. I am mystery. Come closer. Come closer. I'm old as time and forever young. I am every song that will stay unsung. I'll find you, remind you, until you name me. You can't tame me. This is one old game that I can play so well. And the doctors lied. I'm alive, I'm alive, I am dead inside. I'm alive, so alive. I'm alive, I'm alive, I'm alive.
And that was two more from Next to Normal. Why Stay and I'm Alive, a reprise. You're tuned to 101.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Got an hour and a half left in the Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides Sunday show. Call-in number here for all you fans or critics is 831-427-3772. 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz is, well... I'm pretty sure I will hear you if you call, and I think the phones are working, and they are. So call in if you'd like. You can catch me off air if you've got some comments, criticisms, or questions, and that's on the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line at 831-423-4833. So... I kind of compiled a number of articles that interested me. I often do, and I rarely get to them on the air, but I'm going to try to this time. There's There was a vote last week by the San Francisco Board of Supervisors banning public nudity in San Francisco except under limited circumstances. And there's an article called The Wiener Directive, because the guy's name who, I think it's Wiener, I think you pronounce his name, he's one of the supervisors who, he is the supervisor who brought up the nudity ban, because there have been folks concerned about naked guys sort of hanging around on the street corner, and that was just, you know, too much for them to bear, as though that was somehow a sin and a crime and a corrupting the youth kind of thing, which, of course, it isn't. But and then there are the actual, let me put it this way, the actual the current status of the law, as I understand it, again, from secondhand reading, is it, if you are sexually provocative or aggressive, that is a crime. That is a form of perversion. That is a form of exhibitionism and abuse, et cetera, which I think is ridiculous, too, frankly. But it is in case, it is currently the situation. But simply being naked itself, in Santa Cruz as well, is not a crime. You have to show that there, I mean, if you're masturbating in public and that's a crime, it shouldn't be either, I don't think. On the other end, if you're attempting to abuse somebody else, you know, if you're holding them captive or, I don't know, putting them in a position where you're trying to upset them, the whole idea of this great sexual taboo thing has always had me stymied in terms of feeling it's the wrong way to go. It's not healthy for the community to have this kind of prudishness. One can have one's own sexual standards and should, and that's up to you, but to impose this kind of stuff on everybody is, I think, unhealthy and also creates a lot of misery that has nothing to do with public safety. But in any case, nudity has nothing to do with the sexual aspect of things. Nudity is just nudity, and it has been legal in San Francisco, and now it apparently, it's not going to be legal. I'm going to read this story and then comment on it, called Banning Nudity in San Francisco. And the naked guys have been called our canary in the coal mine. What are we going to ban next? Leatherwear that's too revealing? Scary drag queens? That was Joshua Alexander in October, I think, at the Board of Supervisors. The law might be an ass, but its parents tend to be unwise lawmakers. A nice, even depressing example of this is the attempt by the San Francisco Board of Supervisors to make it illegal for anyone over 5, why not 6, 7, or 8, to expose her or his genitals, perineum, or anal region in public locations, including places of transit, knowing, presumably, that they are legislating for the wise, merrily deranged citizens of San Francisco. Exceptions are made for various street fairs and events, Folsom Street Fair and the annual Gay Pride event, to name but a smidgen. But more on point, the supervisors don't want to run foul of the First Amendment. The unfortunately named district supervisor Scott Wiener is at the wheel of this morally indignant measure, reputedly averse to the practice of some nudists to wear cock rings and the like. I don't think having some guys taking their clothes off and hanging out 7 days a week at Castro and Market Street is really what San Francisco is about. That's a quote from apparently Scott Wiener, according to this. What an astonishingly ignorant proposition. San Francisco has been a caricature of itself since it began its pretensions as a city of gold gazing across the Pacific, the liberal base for anything goes. Any supervisor should be thrilled to know that his constituents are happy to go starkers, however flimsy their philosophical basis for doing so might be. San Francisco is a Rabelaisian epic of a city where bowels and genitals are courtiers keeping company. It features the fallen, the deranged, the crippled, and the extravagant. Though the site, through the site changes.org, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors has been petitioned by a certain Mitch Hightower to stop any measure that would ban public nudity. This important freedom has contributed to the continued success of many long-running and popular street events, including Beta Breakers, Pride, World Naked Bike Ride, Up Your Alley Street Fair, Nude and Body Freedom Demonstration, and the Folsom Street Fair. Comments by supporters are instructive. Christina Mosley makes the point that my body is not for you to govern. A certain Christopher Cronin is happy to throw in the commentary of previous thinkers on the body. Michelangelo, what spirit is so empty and blind that it cannot recognize the fact that the foot is more notable than the shoe and the skin more beautiful than the garment with which it is clothed? Oscar Wilde, if man was meant to be nude, he would have been born that way. Specific interest in this measure seems to have developed because of a growing number of men who have congregated in and about the public plaza and the Castro. For one of San Francisco's representatives of hedonic charm, McRae Winspit, quote, a few lewd exhibitionists are really ruining it for the rest of us, presumably for a poor choice of cock ring. For all this silliness, Supervisor Wiener has revealed his fundamental misunderstanding as to what being naked and being nude is. The nude is a construction, itself a product of spectatorship. That, historically, has tended to be a male gaze, history's ogling patriarch. Digging deeper in the vaults of antiquity and the Greek concept of the nude is fundamentally linked with one of integrity, Olympian pomp, pulsing muscles, and wielded spears. While the term integrity is unlikely to wash in the exhibitionistic elan of San Francisco's events, it is worth mentioning. Reaction is key. For down-to-earth types hanging to the spines of law books to get their fix, it would suffice to simply say that being naked need not itself be lewd, I talked about this before, as stipulated by Penal Code Section 314.1. Since the 1970s, it has been settled in California law that mere nudity is not, quote, lewd conduct. Inri Smith, 7 Cal 3rd, 362, 497 P. 2nd, 807 in 1972. Mr. Smith, Mr. Smith was entitled to habeas corpus relief because, in the words of Justice Moss, the, quote, necessary proof of sexual motivation was not and could not have been made in the case at bar. It is settled that mere nudity does not constitute a form of sexual activity. Measures to combat indecent exposure are considered more than sufficient, given that the Smith case sets the test as to what lewd might be, cock ring or no cock ring. Christina De Eduardo, a legal eagle retained to challenge the proposal, is forensic in her query into the proposed ordinance. Three questions need to be asked: whether the ordinance targets a protected activity, whether existing state laws are sufficient to restrict that behavior, and whether state legislation already preempted the field of regulation of nudity in public places. The nudists can win on the first two, that is to say, whether the ordinance targets something that's protected and whether existing state laws are sufficient to restrict the behavior. The last part, concedes Eduardo, is the most problematic use, that is to say, whether the legislation for the state preempts any local laws. Though the scope of regulation proposed by Wiener is broad and might violate the preemption premise, being naked is a weapon. The flesh bared is a magnified protest, an affirmation, a signal against controlled spaces. Bugger the layers. I want to be free. Tampering with that aspect of it shows a degree of ill health and boredom in the polity. Wiener exemplifies this. Free expression in the abstract is really nice until it comes to your neighborhood, Supervisor Wiener says. And the regulator, once unleashed, can never stop. With one ordinance comes another. Exceptions will be made, but others will be removed in the name of annulling abstract concepts such as free speech. The passage of the latest ordinance on public nudity, albeit by a narrow margin of 6-5, is simply the beginning. And that's a story about the nudity ban passed in San Francisco last week. Biney Campmark writes it. He's a Commonwealth scholar at Selwyn College in Cambridge, according to, I think this is from the Berkeley Daily Planet or somewhere else. Not quite sure, but if you want to find the article, you can go to Banning Nudity in San Francisco by Campmark, K-A-M-P-M-A-R-K. About a month ago, we had Native Slaughter Day, sometimes known as Columbus Day. And I usually make comments about Columbus Day, often quoting from a volume that I've used in the past of which kind of gets into untold history. That if you're watching television, there's the untold history of the U.S., which Oliver Stone is doing, some of which I agree with, some of which I don't. And there's another story, Tales My Teacher Never Taught Me, which actually isn't quite the name of the book, but it's something along those lines. And the murderous reign of Christopher Columbus and his brother, depopulating what is now Haiti and the Dominican Republic, Hispaniola, is really notorious. But here's another story about Christopher Columbus and the U.S. Constitution. While it is officially celebrated in the U.S. on the second Monday of October, Columbus first made landfall in the Americas in what is now the Bahamas on October 12, 1492. And though he did in some respects stumble upon a new world, what is more important for the present inquiry is the fact that Columbus immediately imposed the order of the old world upon the one he found. The law of force, articulated most clearly in the doctrine of conquest, which legally sanctions what justice should condemn, was subsequently imposed throughout the Americas and beyond. Though this doctrine was formally abolished by the UN in 1974, the right of conquest, in many respects, continues to determine the course of our lives and the distribution of the planet's resources. However crucial it is to remember the atrocities that Columbus and his successors committed throughout the world, it is equally important to recognize that though its forms may have changed, the underlying dynamic of what Columbus initiated continues to operate in politics, economics, law, and throughout the world today. It is said that events occur in groups of three. With this in mind, it is interesting to consider that Christopher Columbus was born in the year 1451, in the year of the death of the Ottoman Sultan Murad II, and the subsequent ascension of the Sultan's son and heir, Mehmed II. In the following year, 1452, Pope Nicholas V issued his notorious Dum Diversus, the papal decree declaring war against all of the world's non-Christians. Thirdly, one year later in 1453, the Ottoman Turks conquered Constantinople, delivering the terminal blow to the 1,500-year-old Eastern Roman Empire. Among the other results of their military triumph in Constantinople, the Ottoman Turks made significant geopolitical inroads into Christian Europe. Importantly, this included wresting control of the invaluable overland trade routes to India, China, and the other lands to the east from the Europeans. Another consequence of this upheaval was the influx of Byzantine refugees into Italy. With their classical texts in tow, this contributed to the flourishing of learning and secularism that marked the Italian Renaissance, and it is likely that this proliferation of classic Greek and Roman texts, many of which treated the sphericity of the world, that's the fact that it's round, as an ancient and uncontentious theory, contributed to Columbus's later adoption of this topographical notion. Significantly, the Turks' capture of Constantinople also led the banking centers of Europe to shift away from their proximity to the markets on the eastern Mediterranean to the ports of the west, whose sea routes allowed traders easier access to the Indies. Several decades later, it was from just such a port along the Spanish coast that the Christian from the Italian city of Genoa, Christopher Columbus, was to embark in search of a western sea route to Asia, spreading, whether willfully or not, is unimportant for the present discussion, Christian and Roman political, economic, and theological institutions, the old worlds, to the Americas. While they were to some degree mediated by Christian influences, Roman forms of power and institutions of governance were to take firm root in the so-called New World. As the historian Gordon C. Wood informs us, the founders of the U.S. themselves consciously modeled not only their political but also their social projects on classical Roman forms. Few places evidence this more visibly than what will become the most politically powerful city in the Americas, a city that not coincidentally couples the name of George Washington, that admirer of Roman thought and virtue, with Columbus. That's, of course, Washington, D.C., in the District of Columbia. Beyond the classical appearances of these buildings and monuments, however, the political institutions they house are so heavily indebted to Roman forums. To cite probably the most obvious example, the main legislative body of the U.S., the Senate, Latin for Council of Elders, and etymologically related, incidentally, to the word senile, is derived from the Roman institution of the same name, the Roman Senate. Regarding this continuity in governmental, administrative, and economic forms of power persisting from Rome to the present, the Italian scholar Giorgio Agamben observes in his treatise on political power, the kingdom, and the glory that the constitutional separation of powers schema of the U.S. Constitution, among others modeled on Montesquieu's tripartite division, can be traced directly to the Christian Trinity. To be sure, it is not difficult to see the Father, God the Creator, as an analog of the legislative branch. Now, it might be a little hard for me to see that. You know, when I began reading this, I didn't anticipate the density of the Latin and Greek reference. I think it is an attorney who's writing this, and I'm going to spare you listeners the rest of this. I thought it was something a little different than what it's turning out to be. So my apologies for not proofing this a little more carefully. That can happen when you rush down to the studio and with perhaps inadequate prep. I'll take a musical break and take in a few deep breaths, and hopefully you will too, and I'll be right back. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM.
They told me that the wiring was somehow all misfiring and screwing up the signals in my brain. And then they told me chemistry, the juice and not the circuitry, was mixing up and making me insane. What happens when the burn has healed? The skin has not begun. What happens when the cast at last comes off? And then you find the break is always in another bone. They tried a million meds and they strapped me to their beds and they shrugged and told me that's the way it goes. And finally you hid it. I asked you just what did it. You shrugged and said that no one really knows. What happens if the medicine wasn't really in control? What happens if the cut, the burn, the break was never in my brain or in my blood, but in my soul? What happens if the cut, the burn, the break was never in my brain or in my blood, but in my soul?
Make up your mind, this is clarity. Clarity that you did not have before. The treatment is strong, but lasts only so long. It may be your mind's needing more. Make up your mind that you'll try again. Make up your mind, there are moments of light. The one thing that's sure is that there is no cure. But that doesn't mean we don't fight.
Catch me, I'm falling, sinking and sprawling. Baby, I let myself fall. Watch me, I'm falling. Baby, the falling isn't so bad after all.
To be free.
Isn't so bad after all. Watch me, I'm falling.
Make up your mind.
Watch me, I'm falling.
Make up your mind.
Somehow soon I
stay with me. Try again. Don't walk out on treatment. Don't lose what you've won. You've struggled for years, but you've only begun. Stay with me, try again. Is medicine magic? You know that it's not. We know it's not perfect, but it's what we've got. It's all that we've got.
Yeah, that was two more by the Next to Normal gang. Those were The Break and Make Up Your Mind, Catch Me, I'm Falling. So, I've just put in a phone call to a council member-elect, Micah Posner, who will be seated on Tuesday. That's the other thing that's happening on Tuesday, because I cannot get the city council agenda online. And it's not because my computer isn't working or because I'm having trouble with the Internet. It's because the city's internet doesn't seem to be working. And it's a little hard to get access to the City Council agenda. It should be available 24 hours a day, 72 hours in advance of the City Council meeting. That's required by state law. But in fact, as far as I know, it is not posted in a spot where that is possible. The only spot the City Council agenda is posted is at City Hall. And City Hall closes at night. That is to say, if you walk onto the city grounds to try to read the City Council agenda, which is posted outside the City Council chambers, you are guilty of criminal behavior. You're not allowed to be there. So we actually, in the city's attempt to criminalize homeless people and to increase police power to interrogate suspects, it has, in fact, violated a very basic provision of the Brown Act, the act that requires that it post its agendas in areas where people can see what the fuck is happening. Now, you might say, well, who's going to want to go look at an agenda between 10 at night and 6 in the morning? And the answer is probably very few. But the reality is it's still required, and they're not doing anything about that. They would prefer to, apparently go after folks who are, well, give the police the tools to go after people, and also, in so doing, deny everybody access to that area at night, even though there's been no crimes shown other than public protest and sleeping. This was simply done by administrative edict. I thought I had a phone call a moment ago, if you heard that ring in the studio, but apparently the person calling has not kept calling. I'm going to see if my phone lines are working, though, because that may be a problem. Here's a little more of the D-Cell forum. I think this piece actually did come out. This is someone afterward talking about the issue of D-Cell, which is still a very, very present issue, as I mentioned before, and it's coming up again in 2 days at City Council. And its impact on poor people is where money goes to one area, it can't go to another area. And also, if the water rates rise, I'm afraid eventually it's going to cost other people who are poor in the community, even those who are outside, because these costs somehow have a way of extending themselves. Let's hear some more of this.
You're a pretty vigorous supporter, opponent of D-Cell.
But I think that if there is that the opposition has to be fact-based. There is a ton of information that needs to be shared with the public. And the city often dismisses it with, we have looked at that in the past, it didn't work out then, we have already looked at it, so move on to something else. So we really need to go back to the basics. That's what we need.
it appears there's a less of it there than I had hoped. Oh, dear. Well, moving from the defective to the instructive, hopefully, let's turn to some other issues that I hopefully will be able to play a little more coherently. The three things that the City Council is going to be voting on or discussing, actually I'm thinking there are two things that are going to be discussed that I know about, and a third thing that might be of interest to folks who are City Council addicts or want to use the City Council to make a public statement to the community. That's, of course, the oral communications doghouse session that's at 5 o'clock, and that's 5 o'clock on Tuesday or thereabouts. You probably should come a little early because Don Lane is a little whimsical. It's not clear that it's necessarily going to be done exactly at 5. I would assume it would be later to allow people an opportunity to show up at 5 and then still not miss their opportunity. But it's not clear. Usually there's so few people there, and it's such an inopportune time that few people come and talk. Last time there were two, myself and Bradley Snyder, one of the write-in council for City Council. Written candidate for City Council. The other two items on the agenda that might be of interest are the D-Cell issue that I mentioned and a new park for Lower Ocean. And again, I don't know if that's terribly controversial. This was mentioned by J.M. Brown in the Today's Sentinel. There was a $1.8 million state grant for a park at Riverside Avenue and San Lorenzo Boulevard. on the Lower Ocean neighborhood, and it's city is required to construct the park by June 2017. To receive the funding, which comes from the state, it will feature community gardens, benches, a barbecue grill, fountain, swing set, and other playground equipment. Residents like the idea. Be the first new neighborhood park in the city since Poets Park, this is all according to J.M. Brown, the Sentinel writer, was placed in the beach flats in 2007 and Depot Park opened in 2005. And sounds like we got a call coming in on free radio. That would be cool. An actual phone call. Can you imagine that? Hi, you're on free radio with Robert.
Robert Norris?
That's the one. He's the famous non-candidate for city council.
I've heard that. Not emboldened to throw his hat in the ring, as many others so often do.
Why throw good hats after bad? You know what I mean? I believe
I'm a man of many hats, so I have many hats to throw into the ring.
We're talking to that
this metaphor now. So.
You are the Mad Hatter Steve Plaich, who in fact has run for city council twice. And what I'm talking about now is, I was just mentioning that I was trying to describe what's on the city council agenda, and for some reason it is not online. I've looked it up, and it is not available at the moment. And that's unfortunate, because it's nice to know at least 72 hours beforehand what the city council is proposing, as you know.
Yes, of course. Well, I noticed in the paper that they are considering a new park in the Lower Ocean area. I think that's supposed to be on. And also there's another expenditure to be approved for Kennedy Jenks, who does the consulting on the desal.
You mean a boondoggle desal giveaway?
Yes, en masse. So they'll be over there at speaking their mind to the city council for whatever good that happens to do. But I know you called this morning because you were talking about the Smart Solutions conference coming up.
Oh, yes, that too. Before we turn to that, though, and I would, I'm going to try to rendezvous with you if you're around. I know you often go to the Occupy. You regularly go to the Occupy meeting at 2 o'clock at the post office, which happens on Sunday. I expect it'll probably be at least happening in embryonic form, or perhaps in, I don't know, corpse-like form later today. You're a man who's been following the desal controversy for quite a while. The paper says it's $330,000 that's going to be kicked down to these consultants. Have you done any analysis of? They've already kicked down $1.4 million, according to the Sentinel. But you've kept a pretty close eye on these expenditures, yeah?
Well, in the run-up for the plans and specifications, all the energy studies, the entrapment and entrainment studies they did out at the end of the wharf, all the Kennedy Jenks, there's an outfit from Southern California called Data Instincts who handles much of the public relations. But that whole tab so far is in the range of $15 to $16 million.
Wow.
And that simply is just the money that they've spent on all. As you can imagine, it's a $130 million project if it's indeed built.
Well, how can...
So there's an awful lot of plans, specifications in advance of that. Of course, there's all the permitting. They have to go through the California Coastal Commission. They have to have a CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act.
Let me interrupt you, Steve. J.M. Brown, who we know is a trustworthy Sentinel writer, seems to indicate that only $1.4 million has been spent on this particular consultant firm, but there has been there's been up to, what, $14 or $15 million spent already?
Yeah, I think the figure that's really agreed by most folks who are observers of this process is it's somewhere in the $15 to $16 million range now of money has been spent over the last. Of course, now they've been doing this since 2005 when the city council told the water department, build us a desalination plant, because in their judgment it was the only way to get drought protection and to create a supplemental water source. You won't ever hear anybody talking about the desalination project when they're out and about. They talk about a supplemental water supply.
Well,
so that's
now,
the euphemism for it.
If this has been on the books since 2005, why haven't all you activists who apparently only got busy this year, why didn't you mobilize back in 2005, 2006, before all this money was spent on the project? Because, it's been a major claim of desal opponents. Why spend more when the whole thing can be voted down? This was actually presented in an editorial in today's Sentinel.
Sure. Well, I think that the desal alternatives, of which I was a member and still am, I think when Rick Blangianotti got going maybe 3 or 4 years ago now, and I think when the specter was raised, this thing was actually going to be built at some point, and that there were serious environmental concerns, serious energy consumption concerns. Then they really started to mobilize to try to head off the expenditure of the $130 million to buy it. I can't speak, you know, for Rick or Paul Gratz or some of the, you know, founding members of Diesel Alternatives who really have been instrumental in getting us to this point. But the Measure P simply guaranteed the residents of Santa Cruz the right to vote on Diesel. And so it really has no effect on spending money up to what they call the shovel-ready project. And when the EIR is finally approved, which will be now, they say, at the end of 2013, early 2014, then, and all the CEQA requirements and California Coastal requirements are met, the project will be shovel-ready because all the plan specifications will be prepared, all the energy studies will be done, and that's when the citizens can cast their vote about whether or not to spend the $130 million to actually build it.
Of course, in order to reverse, I take it this is going to be a slam dunk through the city council that they'll kick down this $330,000 to this consultant firm to research some more, something that's likely to be voted down by the voters, and all that money will essentially been dumped down the hole.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, if people wanted to, if they had the energy in the next month, they could reverse this council vote with a referendum.
Well, I don't think that they could do that, frankly.
Well, let me put it this way. It may be difficult to do, but it's legally possible.
Well, we just got 8,800 votes to put Measure P on the ballot. And if you're thinking about trying to get whatever the 10% would be for a referendum to qualify it anyway, you know, good luck with that. People are exhausted at this point in, you know, getting signatures and placing, you know, measures on the ballot. And I don't think anybody really thinks that they can effectively mount a referendum drive which would reverse the city council's actions anyway. Frankly, this money was already allocated 2 or 3 years ago by a city council vote, and this is just they keep reallocating parts of it. This is not new money. This is money that was already allocated at some point for this whole plans and specifications process. So it's not like... besides which, it's not really general fund money that we're spending. This was all money that was generated by a three-step up increase in water rates over the last 5 years. Santa Cruz ratepayers, people who live in the city, are paying about 124% more for their water today than were 5 years ago. That money is in a revenue account, surplus account, with the water department, and that's part of the money that's being spent. That account is, by anybody's reckoning, between $29 and $40 million. And that's the money that would also be spent to fund at least partially the diesel plan if it's built.
So, you know, it seems to me, yeah, that it seems to me, Steve, that, you know, again, a naive, ordinary, what's happened to democracy kind of guy, where, well, let's put it this way, when can we find democracy kind of guy like myself, would ask simply, you know, a referendum is something that reverses a city council vote, but an initiative would overrule a city council vote. And I would think that if, you know, I'm not saying that you folks who work so valiantly to get this measure up for a vote of the voters should be forced to, you know, go into overdrive and try something again. But the idea that they're going to spend millions more before they actually have a vote on the actual, as you put it, shovels in the ground project.
Shovel-ready project, yeah.
Seems to me to be something that at least people should be incensed about and want to stop through whatever means necessary, because it's a waste of money unless the voters vote for it, you know? I mean,
You know, you're preaching to the choir, Robert. You know, you get people in the community who are willing to go out and knock on doors and talk to folks about it and get something going.
Right, and I guess the question
for
me...
for sure it's not going to be the diesel turn.
Right, well, don't, you know, the question for me, Steve, is, you know, and again, I'm not holding you, although you surely are responsible for most of the evil in town.
No question about that, or at least behind it in some way.
Indeed, you know, and you are the poster child for evil. Dr. Evil, I suppose. Actually, no, you don't really look like Dr. Evil.
That's the axis of evil. Yeah.
And the axis, yes, yeah, and access to evil.
It's all about access of evil. Isn't that what I said during my campaign?
But I think that you are, you know, you're a person, because you've had a lot of familiarity with the project, you don't have to take it personally and think that you're somehow being criticized, but rather it suggests, well, what could be done is A, B, and C, if anybody wanted to do it. And that, I think, is important for people to know, because who knows? You never can tell what who may come crawling. I mean, you might, Daryl Blair might...
maybe not. These were probably the folks who were involved in the Right to Vote on DCEL signature gathering effort and put Measure P on the ballot and actually got it passed by 71% are the most ardent and the most energetic water advocates in the whole city. And if you can't get them mobilized to do something like this on a referendum, the problem anybody else to do it are
Well, I appreciate you're ever the practical.
They're non-existent.
You're the practical thinker, but I'm not talking about practicalities. I'm talking about what is right and also what is theoretically possible. So that that's really what I was asking you, and I'm still looking for an answer on that. You may not want to give me an answer. You may want to say, forget it, it's not going to work, blah, blah, blah. But in fact, if it's possible, I think we should know that avenue does exist. So what is the avenue for people who would want to actually stop expenditures on this DCEL project dead in the water? Aside from, of course, massive assassination of the entire council and the city manager.
Well, you know, if you thought that this was somehow mismanagement of city funds, I suspect that any city council decision is appealable. And within a certain period of time, you can see that, of course, at the bottom of their council agenda every week. And then failing that, people could certainly take it to court and say, you know, try to get a writ of prohibition. And that would probably be the most direct way to go. I don't necessarily think that, you know, you could raise the amount of signatures it would take on a referendum to have any effect on city council. But the courts could step in. So rather than having the citizens do it, you could petition the court to reverse the city council decision.
And it could be done through referendum if you could raise the number of signatures, in theory. Again, I'm talking theory.
I guess. But,
yeah. Well, that was just my question. I mean, I'm always up to hear what the man who challenged the city and the Occupy movement has to say. And I guess I also want to ask you, as you pointed out, we originally called you to talk about the issue of the upcoming smart solutions to homelessness. Some call it a service provide, a community dialogue. Others call it a poverty pimpery.
I was kind of prompted to call because I noticed the article in the paper today with our mayor, who one of the first statements he made was that pushing the homeless people away doesn't make them disappear. And interestingly, that's exactly what the sweeps were intended to do, and the mayor said not one word against those sweeps.
Correct.
At any point.
Correct.
So, you know, I think the actions always speak louder than words. You recall, Robert, that a couple of years back we had kind of a mini homeless summit over at the Red Church, and there were probably maybe 100 people over there at that time, not rivaling the 250 people that they're imagining are going to be here at Rio, but that was also an opportunity to talk about some solutions, some smart solutions. It occurs to me is just another way of saying we're not smart enough to figure it out on our own, so let's look at what other people are doing, and we'll try to make that a template for what we're doing. And I think a perfect example of that in our community is 180-180. It's a program that works wonderfully in a large city like New York or even in Cleveland, a place like that, where they can truly have the, you know, people place people in supportive housing and have that wraparound social services care that the program is intended to do. Here, they can't do it because we don't have the revenue, the money. So what you get is, you know, them saying, well, we actually put somebody in a home. They're actually living somewhere. All that does without the supportive care, the wraparound care, is allow that person to kind of de-cycle down, you know, indoors instead of outdoors. And so for me, that's not a good model for us. And what they're going to be talking about over there next Saturday is, I'm suspecting, best practices, smart, you know, solutions, all of which were thought up by other people and which may or may not even have any application to our unique problems here in Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz homeless community is unique. Santa Cruz itself is unique. And so we need creative, out-of-the-box, unique solutions to solve that, and not solutions that have been tried other places just because we're simply too lazy to come up with it ourselves. It's the whole, in my view, generally speaking, it's like what we do in terms of the business community. Ryan Coonerty always says, well, we're going to hire a consultant who's going to tell us how to increase our retail businesses, how to increase our retail sales, how to increase the rentals of our commercial real estate downtown, which just says to me that we're not smart enough to do it ourselves. Let's hire somebody else to tell us how to do it. And that is just, that doesn't make any sense to me. We're smarter people than that. We're a better community than that. So we'll see what happens next Monday.
So you will be going to this homelessness summit?
Oh, yeah, of course. I'll be going. And you know, maybe there will actually be, you know, some action that will take place. Again, when I mentioned, and you went to the workshop at the home, at the Red Church 2 years ago, and it was really a wonderful event. They talked about, you know, geez, what can we do, and you know, how are we going to help homeless folks, and what are we going to do to create positive outcomes, and then they did nothing for 6 months. It took, you know, Joel Miller and Scott Galloway and myself and some others to reconstitute the Association of Faith Communities, which is now working to do the satellite shelters that you oftentimes criticize, or to do the safe spaces parking programs, which you oftentimes criticize, or to put on the meals that you always criticize. But nevertheless, you know, those are actions that we've taken that we're 6 months delayed out of that initial get-together of everybody who likes to sit around and huff and puff about what we should be doing, rather than decide and really act on what we are going to do. And that's why I am reluctantly supportive of this kind of a large gathering of folks, and we'll see what happens.
Well, perhaps Paul Lee could be invited to give some of his wisdom. What do you think?
I suspect that Paul will be there. Paul is, you know... Paul looms large in the homeless community, as you know. He's been around for a long, long time, and he's extremely well-meaning. He puts his money where his mouth is my understanding. So, you know, Paul's participation is always welcome. I think that he is actually in a position, he and people like Roland Rabelais are actually working quietly to actually do things. I'd love to see them participate.
As well as holding very meaningful discussions every Monday, simultaneous to the homeless meal right next door.
Yeah, well, you know, Paul's an icon in the community, and he's a guy who has, you know, a lot to contribute.
These are the discussions you called a windbag central, I believe.
I don't go to them because I don't think that's another example of people who talk all the time about stuff and really never do anything about it. So, you know, I mean, that's why I don't participate in that. But I certainly will give the Smart Solutions Conference an opportunity to see if it's really going to do something. If it does, I'll be right there to help them out.
You know, I've been constantly billing you as a person who tries to address, as you're running around trying to survive and run for city council and do needle exchange and suicide prevention, tries to help people who are in court or getting these go-to-court type citations. You never can tell when the hell you have to be there because they get tied up in the computers for so long often. Although maybe that may be changing. I'm not sure what the story is now. I don't know if you've heard this latest decision in the case of Brianna Brewer, who is a street performer with her dog downtown. I don't know. Have you heard about that one?
No, you mentioned it briefly, and I saw the report online.
Yeah, I'm just wondering. I mean, this is something you may not have gotten a lot of involvement in or gotten a lot of reports on, this issue of disabled folks with service animals. Numerous homeless people have service animals, and they're not because they're blind or crippled or, you know, I don't know, you know, whatever. But they have them as companions, and they're still service animals, and yet they face discrimination. Some people have said at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, where you you have a regular session there, still on Fridays, I take it.
Well, they unfortunately draw a distinction between service animals who are physically supportive and those which are emotionally supportive. And unfortunately, I think either the ADA requirements for, the certification of animals like that, support animals, I also draw that distinction. I'm not really sure, but I think, you know, unfortunately, you know, we could have a different interpretation of that if we were a little more compassionate about that kind of thing. But, can I say?
Well, it was interesting that Judge Gallagher, not known for his generosity and compassion toward the homeless, at least in the cases of Linda LeMaster, Ed Fry, and Gary Johnson, as well as other Peace Camp 2010 activists who were convicted and sentenced to 6 months in jail by him for essentially peaceful protest and what amounted to camping.
And your point is,
and Gallagher, who is not notorious for his compassion, is actually found that service animals, ADA has found you don't have to, the regulations allow people to withhold information about what their diagnosis is, what the service animal is for, and so forth. And he's hence found 3 citations against Brianna inappropriate and found her not guilty. One of them, I think, was for panhandling with a dog. Another one was for having a dog tethered nearby. And a third one was for something else involving a dog downtown. She claimed to have been harassed a lot by Officer Warren. Warren and his superior, Sergeant Bush, at the trial, and I was at the trial, claimed that the city's code does not make this kind of distinction that you suggest, only for, a physical disability of blindness. But Gallagher spent 10 minutes holding everybody in silence while he read the code. I haven't read the code. And said he found instead for the defendant. So I have to suggest that maybe the Homeless Lack of Services Center has a different policy than the city. I suppose that's possible.
But yeah, I'm not really familiar.
So that's something you might want to look into insofar as you get these questions that come up. Because I know people have called you and quite regularly call you to get assistance with the ticketing for camping tickets, ticketing for, loitering tickets, for want of a better word, even though loitering is supposedly not a crime.
In fact, I am shortly going off to talk to some of those folks today that I have some meeting scheduled with. So
this means you won't be meeting me at 1:15 at
Probably not, because I have a meeting right at 1.
1:30, perhaps?
Maybe at 1:30 I should be done. Where are you going to be?
At the secret rendezvous where you and I are often.
Well, maybe I will see you there. I better get going, because I've got to prepare a little bit.
Anything coming up in the next week that we should know about? Will you be at the city council meeting?
The dinner at the Red Church. Of course, we're having the legal clinic there. Tuesday, City Council. Wednesday, Occupy Santa Cruz, if we still have meetings on Wednesday night. Thursday, the really big shoe with Robert Norris on Free Radio that nobody wants to miss.
Of course not.
So there's always stuff going on.
All right, and of course, your phone number for those who want to reach you and get your sage advice.
466-6078.
466-6078.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay, take care.
And that was activist Steve Plaich giving us his usual wrap on the issues of a couple of the issues. DCEL, Steve has a way of avoiding issues he doesn't know much about, which I suppose is the wisest way to go. I prefer a more candid, I know nothing about that sort of approach, rather than I'm the authority of everything. But everybody has their own style. And Steve will at least receive phone calls from people at 466-6078. He has helped several people to deal with their citations. And the more people who help to do this, the better, as far as I'm concerned. You want to read more about the Brianna Brewer case, I think that's her last name, Brewer, go to Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, one word, small letters, Santa Cruz. And you can read about it under a street performer's story on the extreme right edge of the screen. So, there are meals today. There's one happening at the Circles Church. Began at 11. I think it goes on for a couple more hours. That's at the end of California Street on the west side. Renee Curry is probably downtown with her sandwiches, although her burritos, I should say, burritos and water and often donuts and things of that sort. A chess set is set out for those who wish to challenge her and her other chess maestros who show up there. That's in front of Forever 21 on Pacific Avenue. And, of course, there's a meal out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center as well, and that's not one of the areas where they do provide some services, regular food there, which I'm glad they do. the real issue, of course, if they call themselves the homeless twice-a-day meal program, insofar as they didn't discriminate against people at the meal, which unfortunately they also do, apparently, at least that's the claim from people I've heard, they would receive less flack from me. But they do call themselves something else, and they get money from the city to do something else and money from private charities to do something else. And that is shelter, which is the main problem for homeless folks at night, because it isn't illegal to eat in Santa Cruz, but it is illegal to sleep at night in Santa Cruz. I suppose it's illegal to try to get food when you don't have it if you have no money. So I suppose that's also the parallel condition to not being able to find a place to sleep if you have no money to buy a $60, $70, $80, $90 motel room or a $30 campsite for the brief period of time when you're allowed to camp in the state parks. So, we got about 45 minutes left in the show. You are still tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. And let's catch a few more street interviews before I disappear into the distance. And also, of course, incoming phone calls, always welcome. If you feel like calling in, I will definitely be answering the phones here at 427-3772. So give a call if you'd like. And I think we have... we do. We have a few more interviews.
Germany, so, by this system.
About 6:30 out here on Pacific Avenue, next to the 1200 Pacific, next to Forever 21, talking with
Ricardo Lopez.
Ricardo, you're not at your normal place where you were normally strumming away at the New Leaf Market. Why have you moved?
My other friend, Ricardo, the visual artist, is up there with an awesome collection of work, and so we share the street up and down, and we're all in this together against the police oppression, which I don't understand what they have against art and music, especially the high quality of art and music that you have here in Santa Cruz. And I know that the people enjoy it. You know, I just can't see where they get off with this. You know, I think it's personally they're against the music and they're against the art. I think it hurts their ears or it hurts their eyes. I'm not sure.
Anything happened in the last week that you think is worth mentioning?
Just the usual nonsense. I mean, isn't there real crime somewhere rather than coming along and I'm telling people not to sit, giving them a ticket for sitting on the street and stuff? I don't understand it. Yeah, I don't understand it. Yeah, don't they have a better uses of public funds? Who's in control of this city?
Any specific things happen you want to bring up?
Not that I can think of right now, because it's a beautiful Friday night, and frankly, I'm overwhelmed by these awesome people and awesome night.
Well, let's strum on then, old man.
Thank you, sir.
So we're talking with
Santiago.
Santiago, you have a number of portraits here. I recognize a few of the figures. It looks like Gandhi, and then there's some other people that I don't recognize. Who else is portrayed here?
I have a portrait of Notorious B.I.G., RZA from Wu-Tang, Method Man, Snoop Lion, Ghostface Killah. I have drawings of Halloween figures in front of their surfboards, like a classic surf photo, and a couple other things.
Well, I notice you also have prices on these. Some are $5, paper prints are $10, 2 for $15, 3 for $20, and you have some more expensive ones that are in frames. Have you been hassled by police for any of these frames or prices? Some people have been given hassles for having prices on their stuff, although as far as I know, it's quite constitutionally required that they leave you alone.
Yeah, I haven't been hassled at all. In fact, I've had a few officers pass me by on the street, haven't said anything to me. The only people that have talked to me are the hospitality folks, and they've been very nice about everything.
They haven't commented on prices or anything of that sort?
No, they haven't. They haven't said anything.
Moved you along?
I haven't been moved along. There's one spot particularly where they don't seem to do that, but I have heard of that happening to other folks, so I've been lucky, I guess. Just they've been very nice to me.
Well, I notice that you are within 30 feet of a change-making machine. You haven't gotten hassle for that.
No, I haven't. I didn't realize that was one of the rules. I actually asked for the rule sheet tonight, so...
Well, unless they tell you it's a problem, I wouldn't worry about it. I mean, you know, nobody's using this space. These rules were concocted to give the police selective enforcement authority, as far as I can see. Where are you from?
I'm from San Jose. I just came from there, and I've recently moved into the SoCal area. But I have been coming to Santa Cruz for the past 6-7 years.
And how long have you been doing this kind of artwork on the sidewalk here in Santa Cruz?
This is probably just my first month doing this.
How many, you actually doing this every night, every weekend?
At least once a week.
And for what, 3 or 4 hours?
Yeah, about that long, sometimes a little longer.
And how can people find your stuff online if they can't?
Santi Stees, that's SantiStees .tumblr.com.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We have another musician who's doing some strumming here in front of Forever 21. We're talking with a man of the street, and you have some thoughts on this lawsuit, which you asked me what would have happened if I'd won and so forth. I said, well, that would the attorneys would have gotten attorney's fees. I would have perhaps gotten a settlement, maybe punitive damages, and hopefully the city council would have been more restrained from harassing people for their speech.
Are you banned from the city council meetings?
No, of course not.
We are allowed to.
Oh, I mean, you know, the rules that the city council violated are still there. It's just we weren't able to win damages from them. The city council, according to the Ninth Circuit Court, cannot eject or arrest someone unless they have an actual disruption in front of them. Not something that they think is disruptive, but something that actually is disruptive.
It's like the thought police, you know. It also seems like they're the little cabal they got going there. I mean, I watched it on TV, the city council meetings, but the way that they, I noticed less like big real estate developments or whatever it is, some kind of big money thing, they all seem to be pals. They all seem to be calling each other by first names, and they seem to have plenty of time, and then when it comes to a person from the city, like I'm not a person singing from the, a lower income person, or someone sticking up for the lower income, or that level, a man in the street or whatever, it's just like, they're basically almost ready to kick them out before they even say 30 seconds, you know, like.
I don't really want to bother with those folks, except to sort of appear to be listening, nodding, smiling, and moving on.
I think there ought to be a rule about the dynasty rule, perhaps. Like, if your name is Coonerty, you know, maybe you got a way to, or something. I don't see how that's fair that they can all just keep his nieces running now or something, or his daughter or something. I'm just saying, well, I don't know. That's my opinion.
Well, I know. His sister, Sheila, ran successfully for the library board.
Maybe she's better than him. I don't know, more liberal or something.
She was on the planning commission or the downtown commission for a while. I don't know. She's slightly more liberal, but not substantially.
It seems like a lot of them all have this moniker of the... I always wonder, I go to other cities, it's Democrat and Republican and independent stuff. It's not progressive. It seems like it's like a label to hide behind or something like
that. Oh, yeah. I mean...
very progressive. Well, you know...
It's sort of an illusion, really.
That's what I mean, yes. Yeah, it's like that mind... It's the word speak thing. Where you, it's just a...
just by changing the word somehow, it's like...
Well, they're trying to provide the illusion that they're liberal and forward-thinking, and that they, but that's not the case on many issues.
I think it's the pool of voters, because it's sort of generic, and you can't really tell, unless you're a been here quite a while, or at least knew, or in the know, you wouldn't really know. You know, they appear like friendly people when you first look at them, but what their actions are doing or whatever, I can't go to the city council meeting. I might just start, I'll ruin my career. I'm a little too over the top. I can't really...
You know, I think the more people are over the top who, if you have any reason to go there, you shouldn't feel afraid. But yeah. The problem with going to city council meetings is it's so often ineffectual for getting anything done unless you have ties with the members of the city council.
Yeah, it just seems like the same old catch-22 or whatever. They've kind of got the... I came here, it was real liberal when I first came here. It was like amazing. You know, just like...
Well, how long have you been here?
I really started hanging out in the late 70s,
oh, wow.
Right out of high school.
You've been around.
I skipped school, come over from San Jose, and just hang out.
I was here in the 70s, but I was not at all involved with city council, and I was much more kept to myself, or, you know, was not involved in this kind of activist activity. So I'm interested in how things went back then. That's when the sleeping ban was passed by city council in 1978.
I was down in Santa Monica a few years ago. It's kind of amazing how many they have armies of homeless people in Santa Monica. It's warmer out, but there's never any real problems. I don't see anybody, you know, it might be a few drunks, but I mean, they don't go after the homeless. There's so many of them, they can't. And they're just not hassling them. And people, they sleep in doorways at night, but when the morning, 6, 7 in the morning, the stroppy owners come around, they leave. That's kind of the way it is. But no homeless people are getting, like, tickets or taken to jail for being homeless.
There has been quite a crackdown on homeless in Santa Cruz in the last 6 months. Yeah. Although, candidly, I know that Santa Monica, at least a decade ago, they were tightening up laws in the same way that Santa Cruz is, or in similar ways.
Yeah.
But there was a more active movement to defend the homeless down there. But we've had that. It's a problem all over the country. But, of course, you know, you try to fight these issues where you are. And I'm in Santa Cruz.
Not sure what else to...
Yeah. So, thank you very much, and have a good night.
Thank you.
All right. We have notes.
Next interview.
All right, man. From Saxy, Peter.
Forever.
Thank you.
Yo-Yo.
Any comments, Yo-Yo, on the why you're shaking my hand?
Because Robert Norris is an amazing fucking person, and the cops just stole my socks. Well, I have no socks. I have sand in my shoes. So if any of you out there, listeners, want to... donate socks to Yo-Yo's Sock Fund, please feel free to do so.
Can you give me some details about why your socks were important to the police?
Well, I was arrested for stealing a bike that I never stole.
When was this?
On Wednesday, and I just went...
It's Friday.
Yeah, and I guess when I was booked, I took my socks off and I put them in my property box, and when I got my property tonight, they weren't in there.
They socked it to you.
Yeah, Santa Cruz PD definitely socked it to me. I didn't mean to interrupt that.
No, it's fine. So, do you have a court date for...
No court date. They dropped all the charges. They looked at the tapes, saw it wasn't me, so they ended up letting me go.
How long do they hold you for?
Three days, but 3 days plus my socks.
Well, actually, if it was Wednesday, it was 2 days, or maybe a day and a half. What time on Wednesday were you taking?
Like 7:30 at night.
So it was about Thursday night. It was about a day and a half, perhaps.
Yeah,
felt like 3 days.
Yeah, plus my socks.
Plus your socks. I'd give you my socks, but I have no socks.
Yeah, sandals and socks don't go very well together.
Not unless it's really cold.
Yeah, definitely.
And again, we've been talking with...
Captain Motherfucking Yo-Yo.
Thank you, Captain Motherfucking Yo-Yo.
You're welcome.
And here's... So, Yo-Yo, you say you just got out of prison 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, I got out of prison 3 weeks ago. I did 3 years for petty theft with about $1 million priors.
What kind of a petty theft was it?
I stole a bicycle back in 2007 and got a drug program because I was a drug addict.
What kind of drug?
Methamphetamine.
Still in that situation or better?
It's a lot better. I just smoke pot now.
Okay.
I don't even drink anymore, which is a huge thing for me.
And private bike or a store? Or?
It was a bike that somebody had left outside of a store.
This is in Santa Cruz? Or?
No, this is in San Mateo.
I see. And so you were, your priors were similar thefts, or?
Yeah, yeah. Well, they were mostly all from stores.
We're talking because to buy drugs for the thrill of it all as a career.
Well, I mean, both to buy drugs and to survive and get the things that I needed, because I've been on the street since I was 16 years old. So
originally from
right here in I was born at Dominican Hospital, raised in Aptos.
And are you now a useful member of society, or do you wish to discuss that?
I'm a street kid.
And how do you what do you do, for example, to sleep at night? Are you outside?
I camp on Cowles Beach.
And have you been hassled there recently?
First alarm gives us trouble every so often, but then we just move further on down the beach and they leave us alone. Okay. As long as we're off the hotel property, we're...
How many are you?
About 30.
And is this, because I have heard of crackdowns this summer that were heavy, even some more recent crackdowns, but nothing on Cowles Beach in the last few weeks?
No.
And are you there every night or just occasionally?
I'm there most nights. I've been there the past few nights because I've been in jail trying to find my socks.
And we wish you luck with that.
Thank you.
Sock it to him.
Gotta sock it to him.
Thank you, Captain Motherfucking Yo-Yo.
Thank you, Robert Norris.
All right, man.
And in fact, there has been a lot of police activity at Cowles Beach subsequent to stories on Santa Cruz Patch. I guess it was on YouTube and in the Scent Anal about needles and campers and illegal campers and homeless people on Cowles Beach. And that's resulted in, at least when I interviewed folks at the Red Church last Monday, one guy, I think it was, I played that interview on Thursday, reported that he was the only person left camping there. Everyone else had been driven away. This interview, I think, is from the Friday before last. That was the day Linda LeMaster's guilty verdict came in. She's the woman convicted of 647E, lodging with the two-year-old protest against the homeless anti-homeless sleeping ban law. She has yet to be sentenced, and that will be coming up probably in a month or two. It's being appealed, as is my verdict. Looks like we're going to be, once the judge certifies the trial, which, strangely enough, over in San Jose hasn't happened. That's my trial in the, what I've alternatively called the Heil-Krone, or the two mayors trial, where two mayors were facing a civil lawsuit for having me arrested falsely and jailed for non-disruption of a meeting, which they called disruption by the silent, don't act like a bunch of Nazis, mock Nazi salute after they had harassed, well, threatened a woman at the council. And I let them know, as an expression of free speech, what I thought about that. the jury found they were not guilty in the sense of they were not liable for any of the damages, and we're going to try to get that verdict reversed and get a new trial. I'm skeptical about the chances of that actually happening, but there are some interesting indications. The judge hasn't certified the case. Usually judges certify the case quickly, I'm told by my attorneys, though. My attorneys have a lot at stake here. They have a lot of money at stake. They've spent 10 years on this case, and it's all come out of their pockets. So they want to recover their attorney's fees. And we'll see if they're successful. But the issues are also very basic ones about the right to criticize your city council. Provided you don't do it disruptively, can the city council label you a disruptor and have you arrested and then just ignore it and go right on without any kind of consequence to the city council? Or should they be held accountable for falsely having you arrested and excluded from a public meeting? I mean, that's really the issue. Let's hear some more from, I think this is, today is the 25th, so this would be the, I think it's the 9th of November, but I could be wrong.
And in front of Jade in the Cafe Del Marat. All right, you got socks?
Yo-Yo got his socks.
All right, there you have it. And here we have a mariachi, traditional singer, usually a group of five or six folks, but just one tonight. Hey, Barb.
Hey, Rob.
And it's, well, you can judge for yourself the quality of the music.
Pasa
And it might have been actually more recently than that. It might have been last Friday, but I'm not sure. In any case, it's within the last few weeks. A few street scenes, a few sounds from the street. And apparently it's silence in the studio and silence on the phones. Again, phone numbers here if you want to get in touch in the last 25 minutes of the show is 427-3772. I've left a message with Micah Posner asking him to give a call to give us the update on what's actually happening on the City Council agenda, because City Council members do receive a special agenda packet, which we don't get. You can also learn about the City Council agenda by going to the library, where it's posted during library hours, but of course on the weekend those are limited hours. If you want to read the puff piece on Don Lane, it's on the front page of the overpriced Santa Cruz Sentinel. And I'm looking over just a variety of clippings I've gotten. Here's let me find something. It might. Here's a clipping from Thursday's Chronicle. The city of Detroit has been ordered to pay $1.1 million to a young man who was rousted out of bed as a 14-year-old, charged with murder, and held in a violent juvenile lockup for nearly two years before being acquitted of a fatal shooting in his neighborhood. Cabel Sosa, now 19, claimed police violated his civil rights by coercing him to put his initials on a confession he couldn't even read. City of Detroit has kicked down $1.1 million or has been ordered to do so. And then for those following the right to choose controversy, the rate of abortions in the United States fell by 5%, the largest single year decrease in a decade. Researchers for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported last Wednesday in Atlanta about 18% of all pregnancies in the United States end in abortion, the CDC noted. And here's a little something about Thanksgiving. Interesting stuff on Squanto and the Pilgrims, but I'm going to leave that one aside since just because. Oakland Police Department is facing a federal takeover, and it's interesting that the police union is actually running scared, as well as the city officials like Mayor Gene Kwan, who are opposing this federal takeover. And even opponents or supporters of more militant police behavior, like Chip Johnson, who's a writer for the Chronicle, who's a columnist, are sort of, I don't know if they're confused or they're, well, he writes a column that's interesting. The Oakland Police Department, he writes, is sliding fast toward a federal takeover of some kind or another. You might think this would be the kind of thing the rank and file would strongly fight, but get this, they're practically begging for a takeover. The police union, in a filing with U.S. District Court Judge Thelton Henderson, said the department's leadership was useless, even dangerous. Henderson will preside over a December 13th hearing that could determine the future of the department. The 29-page filing wasn't written to add to Oakland's woes or as an attempt to sandbag the city's case, said Rocky Lucia, a partner in the Raines Lucia Stern law firm that represents the Oakland Police Officers Association. Lucia said the law firm produced the document because it couldn't be sure that the city attorneys, who are defending the city against a possible police department takeover, would address specific issues facing its police officer clients, some of whom have been the subjects of official misconduct complaints. Uh-huh. We all want a functioning police department, said Lucia, whose firm represents 120 police officer associations across the state. We represent Fresno, San Francisco, but the cops in Oakland believe, and with all the guns and violence on the street, that the next car stop could be their last, he says. Yeah, so why, who needs the Constitution when you have to defend yourself? Sorry, it's a quick addition by me. Okay, the article continues, given the breadth of problems facing the city from governance to crime, Lucia's and certain Oakland leaders are up to the task. The problems facing the city are much bigger than a receiver, Lucia said in a phone interview. A judge can't fix all the problems. The legal dilemma stemming from the city's inability to satisfy an almost 10-year-old court agreement is a byproduct of the dysfunction that has seeped into every aspect of city governance. City leadership's failure to recast the Oakland Police Department isn't local government's only failure in recent years. Actually, what's happening here is, I think, our writer, Chip Johnson, is trying to shift focus from the brutal Oakland Police Department to the broader city government, and also ignore the fact that the city government may be trying to place the blame on lower police officers as well as upper management in ways that the Police Officers Association, now realizing that the federal receivers are going to be coming in, whether they like it or not, they are running for cover. But we aren't getting a clear, that's my suggestion as to what's going on here, though I'm not in the know, don't have any solid documents, just some thoughts. Oakland has paid out tens of millions of dollars in police abuse claims since a 2003 case in which more than 100 victims of police abuse filed a lawsuit against a department and a group of rogue Oakland cops who called themselves the Riders. Just last week, the city paid $4.6 million to 39 defendants whose civil rights were violated when police forced them to drop their trousers in public searches. I don't think the mayor demanded that the police department do this. I think this is the police department that did this. And to suggest that its general governance in the city is simply to try to shield the police department. But it is true, I suppose the mayor should have tried to intervene, or the city manager. I guess Oakland has a strong mayor system, unlike Santa Cruz, where the real boss is Martin Bernal, city manager, for those who are not yet aware of that. Oakland's Office of Information Technology left officers in the field with unreliable radio service for almost 2 years. He states this as a fact. It's probably an allegation in the Police Officers Association's recent filing here. Finally, and perhaps most important, the city has failed to maintain a minimum number of police officers in the field in spite of a 2004 parcel tax measure approved by voters for that very reason. That failure has placed officers and citizens at risk and has contributed to the department's inability to retain veteran officers or give young officers time to gain the experience needed to become a seasoned, wise street cop. These are their excuses for the violence in the Occupy, for the abuses of the last decade. You know, I think, I got to admit, I have a bias that is not, I would have to look at all the facts, but I think this sounds like it could well be a convenient excuse, or certainly something that is not a real explanation as to why there's been so much abuse and why the federal receivers are finally saying, fuck this shit, we're taking it over. Last week, union officials representing Bay Area TV camera crews told local stations they would no longer film news stories in Oakland without being accompanied by security guards. That's not a positive sign. Maybe they're afraid they're going to get beaten up by the cops. but that's not part of the story. That's not a positive sign that Oakland City officials have come any closer to solving the most obvious and glaring issues before them. It also makes Oakland look like a city in a third world nation. There's no magic solution here. Handing over control of the police to a judge or a federally approved receiver doesn't address the city's deeper problems. It just passes them along. Leadership must come from inside Oakland's highest elected offices. Again, trying to avoid the fact that the police department itself may be the inveterate source of this kind of corruption and brutality rather than the mayor, although the mayor, I'm sure, has some responsibility. Let's take one of our famous musical breaks, and I'll be back. Again, if you want to actually spice up my endless talking with a little of your own, you can call in 427-3772.
Maybe I've lost it at last. Maybe my last lucid moment has passed. I'm dancing with death, I suppose. But really, who knows? Could be I'm crazy to go. They say you should stay with the devil you know. but when life needs a change, and the one devil won't, you fly to the devil you don't. Maybe I'm tired of the game, of coming up short of the rules of the shame. And maybe you feel that way too. I see me in you. No one could see, but maybe one day she'll be free. It's so lovely that you're sharing. No, really, I'm all ears. But where has all this caring been for 16 years? For all those years, I prayed that you'd go away for good. Half the time afraid that you really would. When I thought you might be dying, I cried for all we'd never be. But there'll be no more crying, not for me. Things will get better, you'll see. Not for me, 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 you'll see. Maybe we can't be okay, but maybe we're tough and we'll try anyway. We'll live with what's real, let go of what's past, and maybe I'll see you at last. We tried to give you a normal life. I realize now I have no clue what that is. I don't need a life that's normal. That's way too far away. But something next to normal would be okay. Yeah, something next to normal. That's the thing I'd like to try. Close enough to normal to get by. We'll get by. We'll get by.
And that was another one by the Next to Normal Gang. That was Maybe. Next to Normal, probably the, maybe the theme song of the scene. So, yeah, here's a little bit more on the San Francisco nudist. It was on the front page of the Sentinel on Wednesday. And never before have so few fought for the right of so many to wear so little. Well, it wasn't exactly like Churchill in the Battle of Britain, but the handful of activists opposing a nudity ban in what's arguably the nation's most liberal and libertine city gave it their all and then some. In the end, the specter of unchecked brashness was too much, even for a city where usually anything goes, and the San Francisco Board of Supervisors voted 6-5 to enact a public nudity ban. Moments later, boos and a sudden shredding of clothes by aggrieved audience members led to a hastily called recess as naked people loudly and lustily voiced their displeasure. Good for them. Gerhard Clark, 55, of Oakland, wore only a white stocking cap, white socks, and white underwear briefs as he shouted about recalling Supervisor Scott Wiener, the band's author. Now, that is really his name, a Wiener. Maybe it's Weiner, but it looks like Wiener to me. And he certainly is one. Clark said he's confident he'll be able to keep on going Starkers. Activists last week filed a preemptive lawsuit to block the city from implementing the ordinance, seeking redress for the right to undress. This lawsuit will wipe out these fascist clones, Clark predicted. Others more soberly assessed what the ban says about a city that prides itself on openness. We used to say two men kissing was bad for children to see, but now we've learned better, Taylor Whitfield, 25, clothed, said in a corridor outside. This is a step backward. Though there is no local ordinance or section of the Santa Cruz Municipal Code that expressly prohibits or allows public nudity, that doesn't mean that there's a free-for-all for would-be nudists in Santa Cruz. Technically, said Santa Cruz police officer or police spokesman Zach Friend, who apparently is now still holding down two positions, cop PR and supervisor. I don't know. Is he double dipping? I don't know. Officers are free to use the state's indecent exposure laws at their discretion when it comes to public nakedness. However, he said that's in theory, but not necessarily in practice. It's never really been an issue, Friend says. And I don't have a lot of information on nudity arrests in Santa Cruz. I think they have happened. However, he said that's in even in a city as comfortable as San Francisco with random, once-in-a-while nudity, it got the heebie-jeebies in recent years as more people, particularly a group of men in the predominantly Castro district, took to walking around in the all-together all the time. Sounds like a healthy move to me. The supervisors 1 year ago passed an ordinance requiring nude people to put something, a towel or maybe a newspaper, between their bare behinds and seats in public places. It also banned nudity in restaurants. I guess they don't want to let them niggers in either, you know. I might get cooties. But outcry from city residents and business owners continued, and so Weiner, a gay Democrat whose district includes the Castro, introduced the ordinance to ban exposure of rear ends and genitals on public streets, sidewalks, and transit. Naked breasts are still okay, as is nudity for children younger than five, or for anyone at city-permitted parades, fairs, festivals, such as the Folsom Street Fair, Pride Parade, and Bay to Breakers Race. Nudists do call in, 427-3772, or actually anybody. And the San Francisco Chronicle, supporter of prudery par excellence, does denounce the five who voted against this change in an editorial. And there's a picture of a naked protester sitting on the steps of City Hall. And good for him or her. I can't tell whether it's boy or a girl because the paper tastefully removes any genitalia or secondary sexual characteristics. There was some talk about the Walmart protests last time. Dangerous John, in the only call I got last show, called in from San Jose, noting that there was a Walmart series of protests on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, planned. He didn't know if there was anything in Santa Cruz, and I don't know if there was anything in Santa Cruz or anywhere else. I haven't really seen any. There have been some articles about the implications of the federal I should say the state laws in Colorado and Washington that are overturning the criminalization of marijuana that make it legal to have small amounts. And there's a couple of points. Both states are holding off on plans to regulate and tax the drug while waiting to see whether the Justice Department would assert federal authority over the drug. Prosecutors in the state of Washington's largest counties have dropped all pending misdemeanor cases of marijuana possession Friday in response to that state's vote to legalize the drug. The Obama administration has largely turned a blind eye to the 17 states that currently flout federal drug law by allowing people with medical conditions, and I doubt that actually, in California, they've been cracking down and not ignoring it. If Colorado's marijuana ballot measure is not blocked, it would take effect by January 5th, the deadline for the governor to add the amendment to the state constitution. The measure allows adults to possess up to an ounce of marijuana and six marijuana plants though public use of the drug and driving while intoxicated are prohibited. Colorado's measure also directs lawmakers to write regulations on how pot can be sold, with commercial sales possible by 2014. In Washington state, marijuana possession of an ounce or less would become legal on December 6th if the measure is not blocked, though setting up a state-run sales operation would take a year. Denver attorney Robert Corey in Denver, naturally enough, told the crowd at the National Marijuana Business Conference that President Barack Obama sent a signal about marijuana. He made a record number of campaign visits to the battleground states, to the battleground state, I guess it was Colorado, this year, and never talked about the marijuana vote. Silence equals consent. The time for the federal government to talk about marijuana legalization is over. The election has passed. Marijuana got 50,000 more votes than Obama on Tuesday. Don't think they didn't notice that. That's an article in the Sentinel from November 10th, sometime back. And in Latin America, Mexico City, a group of Latin American leaders declared Wednesday that votes by the two U.S. states to legalize marijuana have important effects. The declaration by leaders of Mexico, Belize, Honduras, and Costa Rica didn't say they were going to weaken their own anti-marijuana laws, but they said they would make enforcement of the bans more difficult. They called for the Organization of American States to study the impact of the Colorado and Washington votes, and that the UN General Assembly should hold a special session on the prohibition of drugs by 2015 at the latest. So their markets are going to get taken up by Colorado and Washington. I learned something new about the state legislature, which I normally try to pay as little attention to as I can. Now that the Democrats have a supermajority in the both houses, not to mention the governorship, they can do things such as they can raise taxes directly, they can put constitutional amendments on the ballot, they can override vetoes, and pass bills that will go into effect the moment they are signed instead of the next year. That's kind of interesting. The last time that a party had a two-thirds majority in the Assembly and the State Senate in California was 1993, and it was held by Republicans. There's talk to overturn Proposition 8 to make same-sex marriage legal. There's talk to change some fees into taxes. Fees can be passed by a majority vote, and so people can be taxed more. In Madrid, banks halt evictions for 2 years. Spain's major banks have agreed to suspend evictions of most financially vulnerable homeowners, a move to take the heat out of an increasingly dramatic issue that has affected thousands and shocked the nation with 2 suicides in recent weeks, according to a story from November 13th in the Chronicle. The Spanish Banking Association declared a 2-year halt on Monday when officials from the conservative government were due to hold talks. Debate is usually centered on Spain's unusually tough rules for mortgage holders. Homeowners unable to make monthly payments may be evicted, but also remain liable to repay whatever value is left on the mortgage after repossession. More than 350,000 people in Spain have lost their homes in this way over the past 4 years, many because they've lost their jobs or seen their wages plummet. In the U.S., people who default can return the keys to the bank and walk away from the debt. But they also have to walk away from their homes. And, of course, there are massive street protests in both Spain and Greece. Police arrested a 42-year-old man Monday afternoon in late October, according to the Sentinel, after he reportedly was performing a lewd act in a garbage enclosure. One wonders if this is one of the lewd acts that was under the broad discretion of the Santa Cruz Police Department, according to Zach Friend. But a witness spotted Richard Stipe touching himself inside the trash receptacle of a Chestnut Street apartment complex, police spokesman Zach Friend said. Stipe, described as being transient, was arrested on suspicion of indecent exposure around 2:30 p.m. No masturbation for you. No touching yourself for you unless you have a private place to go, even if you're in a trash receptacle. That's pretty bizarre. There is a Marin attorney who is being disbarred, or a state bar judge has recommended disbarment, because she told owners they could save their homes by suing lenders for predatory practices. And it's not clear to me whether this is, whether she was trying to protect her clients, but the parent company she was working for also advised them to withhold mortgage payments, so they lost their homes. So she was trying to help them, but they got screwed. Sandwiches are being barred in Rome under a new municipal ordinance which outlaws drinking and eating in areas of particular historic, artistic, architectural, and cultural value to better protect cities' monuments like the Colosseum, the Pantheon, and the Spanish Steps. Fines range all the way up to $650 for culinary recidivists. Rome has passed any number of bans during the past 5 years against prostitutes, homeless people, and men taking their shirts off in the parks to sunbathe. And I think that's just about all I've got for you at the moment. There's actually some more, but time is fleeting, and I want to... I'm going to go back on my word to replay the... Central African Republic, unreported world's account of the Central African Republic's witches situation. I frankly don't know much about witches. At one time I had some dealings with people that I thought seemed to be pretty witchy. Didn't know which way they were going to go. And of course, I always repeat the old joke about how you'll never starve in the desert. Because of the sand witches there. That's what happens when you don't call in. Things get pretty desperate here at Free Radio. Anyway, so I'm not going to be playing that. You have to go online if you want to get it yourself, Unreported World. I am going to play later on again. I thought that was a very interesting homeless segment by Unreported World, and that is something I will be playing again. But coming up next on Free Radio is Making Contact, followed by, at 3 o'clock, Law and Disorder. So I'll be back again on Thursday, most likely, at 6 o'clock in the evening. If you want to reach me about anything connected with this show, or if you're interested in volunteering to help with monitoring police abuses around homeless bullshit, I should say the bullshit imposed on homeless people by police agencies and other authorities, whether it's waking them up at 2 in the morning or stealing their blankets or running them out of town, give a call to the Huff line. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and the phone number is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Occupy Santa Cruz will, I think, be meeting on the steps of the post office at 2 o'clock for those who want to check out that meeting. I think it was rather informal last week, but activists continue to be active, and I hope they continue to do so either inside that organization or outside it. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm going to see if we have the fixins of a